It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis and Stacey Higginbotham are here, and we have a full agenda, a full slate of fabulous things to talk about. Almost too many to mention. Disney trying to acquire at a last-ditch attempt the 21st Century Fox movie studio and some TV content. The future of broadcasting. Maybe it's on Instagram? Maybe it's a scam. And gaming. Esports is about to explode. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 462, recorded Wednesday, June 20th, 2018. The people formerly known as the audience. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a huge role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the latest news from the Googleverse with Stacey Higginbotham of Stacey on IoT.com. She's at GigaStacey on Twitter. Hi, Stacey.
Hello, Leo and Jeff.
And there may be some exclamations at some point during the show because you're waiting for the birth of a child.
Yes, not my child, to be clear. My nephew, but always a good time.
No one has ever, I wish they would, attempted to give birth during a show.
Nope. That does not sound like any fun whatsoever, having given birth to a child. I'm going to say no.
Not worthy of podcasts.
Nope.
No.
Little too real, I think,
yeah,
for most people.
Yeah, look, it's getting real. It's getting real in here. Jeff Jarvis is here. He is professor of journalism. I'm sorry. What's the full title?
I am the Leonard Tao Professor of Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York and Director of the Tao Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism.
I only got as far as Leonard Tao.
Getting faster and smoother.
He's really good.
Get that in the lower third, Carson.
Oh, wow.
We're working on it. We had to get our animation department to make it move.
It'll have to scroll. The Leonard Tao Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark School Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York, Jeff Jarvis. I give you the director of the Tao Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism.
Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY. At the City of New York.
Yes. He's our man. Jeff's our man. If he can't do it, no one can. Did Instagram have an event this morning? This is the weirdest thing ever. Instagram had an event, started 2 hours late.
No.
Yeah.
It wasn't 2 hours, was it? I just thought it was like a little bit late.
New York Times sent 6 reporters.
Dear Lord.
Are you serious?
Well, it's either 4 or 6. I'm not sure. And they made a couple of announcements. One, 1 billion monthly active users. Or MAUs. 1 billion monthly active users. And the other is this new thing called IGTV. A long form, as long as an hour. Guess it's a competitor to YouTube. Video platform that is proudly vertical. But I looked on it. I can't get it yet. It's going to come out over the next few weeks.
I was going to say, maybe you're too old.
Yeah, I don't get it, man.
How will one find it?
Instagram. It will be available on iOS and Android.
So it's a separate app.
It's
a separate app.
IGTV.
Oh, IGTV. Are you still? Let me try it. Do you need to sign up for it, or are you linked to it via your Instagram account?
I suspect it's through your Instagram account. And
I would hope so.
The new platform is for content creators. Anybody know any content creators? It makes Instagram a direct competitor with YouTube and Facebook, I guess. And I guess we should say traditional media.
I just downloaded it right now.
Oh, you got it?
Yeah. Well, this should look more like YouTube.
It was not the first IGTV. It was like the fifth.
Oh, all right. I haven't checked since a little while ago. So they must. It's gone up. Good.
On the Android store.
Yeah, I'm looking at it on the Android. IGTV is kind of like IPTV. Get it?
And here's the first person I see. Your competitor.
Who's my competitor? I don't even know if I have a competitor.
Marcus. Oh,
Marcus Brownlee. Of course he'd be on there, wouldn't he? Oh, yeah. It is on Android now.
Yep.
So did he just come up?
He was the first one. Of course, the world is
it
a
people
world of carousels.
Is it people you're following? Oh, it's carousels.
No, it's Kim Kardashian. I don't follow Kim Kardashian.
Okay.
It's okay, Jeff. We know your secret.
He follows Kim.
I do not.
Welcome to IGTV.
Trevor Noah. So there's like five Trevor Noahs.
Here's the onboarding. It knows because I have Instagram on this phone. Welcome. Continue as Mr. Laporte. That's me. Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. I have two-factor on this. Hold on.
That's like the story of my life. Two-factor.
Oh, I love two-factor.
Better for me.
I love it. I am two-factor everywhere because it's better. Ooh, I like the whites. I got snow at first. Do you think kids...
Dingo pups are the cutest.
Do you think the kids will know what that snow is? Oh, they are. They're very cute.
Dingo
pups.
So here's the Instagram announcement. 17 minutes and 20 seconds. That's on there. Kevin Systrom announcing IGTV, the lot of big balloons. It's vertical, but it's not aggressively vertical. It doesn't fill the whole screen.
No, it's more. Well, no. If you get rid of the carousel, it's full.
So let me create a channel. Oh, so
see,
it
just swipe down the carousel and it's full then.
With videos longer than a minute, you can do more.
Built I don't know for how vertical, I ended up on this.
But. Built for full screen vertical video, so it's meant to watch on mobile. So should I create a channel?
Yeah, we should make something right now. Yes.
View your channel. It's the Mr. Laporte channel. So upload. Oh, you can't do it live?
Create channel.
I don't know what I'm watching. I think this is the announcement. Upload video. Allow it. No videos found. So you don't. Gosh, you'd think they'd have live. Am I missing something? I guess I am. I'm not. So you upload videos. Yep, there's beauty tips with Kim Kardashian.
Okay, so it's probably it's more like YouTube. I know YouTube has live, but most people do their videos and then upload them.
Here's a robot dancing. This is the announcement. So this is probably why it was 2 hours late. They had, they had a lot of...
They're still working on it.
Set up. There's a lot of dancing and these are all creators, right? Lore DIY is going to make a, it looks like she's going to do some bedazzling, some shirt bedazzling. Somebody, unfortunately, I guess she can't afford jeans because they're all ripped up.
Leo, come on.
I'm an old man. Now they're dancing down a hall, looks somewhat like a brothel. And then this reminds me so much of the YouTube year-ender videos, right, where they go quick. Cuts.
Whoa.
Creator to creator.
Sorry, A Star Is Born official trailer from Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Yeah, she's doing A Star Is Born.
I didn't know that.
Susie Meow. So that's probably the monetization strategy, right? If you could do this, you could do ads.
Right.
I find Instagram stories a little annoying. I noticed neither of you do Instagram stories, but everybody...
I don't either.
Do people watch
the stories format is taking over the world. Video and stories are taking over the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel kind of old. But, I used to make Vines, but I don't do stories, and I think I'm just tired and old. That's my excuse. I'm tired and old.
Yeah.
But, and Jeff, I was going to ask you about this. This actually relates a little bit to this. I was reading whatever version of The New Yorker I'm on, which is way late, but they did a whole thing on...
The guilt machine, The New Yorker. It just piles up guilt.
That's why you got to get texture, right? So you can... it won't pile.
It's Scam, S-K-A-M, Scam Austin. They did a big story on it, and it was a Norwegian television show for teens made by like the Norwegian Club of Prostitutes. And it looked so fascinating.
I went to a conference. God, I go to so many conferences. Where was it? I went to a conference where I followed her on stage, the creator of
Julie Adlam.
You know what's funny? We've seen this before. This was What was it? Lonely Kid 24. What was it?
Oh no, this is different because it is very similar, but it is actually
scripted.
There was even
it
a
is
book.
Scripted.
Remember the books of the love letters?
Lonely Girl. Yeah, Lonely Girl 15.
We saw a lot of attempts to create episodic content that
this
looked like it was
wildly
social.
Popular. Where the which darn conference was it?
Norwegian. Oh, I thought asking me which country.
So is she Norwegian, is it just on Facebook? Where is it?
No. So this is what's really exciting. So let's give people context. So Lonely Girl was 2006 to 2008. This pretended to be a vlog back when vlogs were a YouTube diary of a teenager.
It's a very early YouTube thing.
Super early. Now, this is actually a scripted television show that they create little 1 to 8 minute snippets. They post them on Facebook Watch. It's part of the Facebook Watch program, which is Facebook's TV effort. And they appear in people's timelines like they're like your friends, you know, and this drama is happening at a Austin high school. But then the characters all have Instagram and Twitter profiles, and they go back like years. So you can actually like cyber stalk these people and find out like, oh, they used to be friends, but now they're not. And so it's really, and it's they film so it was and kind build of, the script in response to audience like participation. So it's a very new way of
consume it is by going to different media.
It just pops up in your Facebook feed. And then it gets better if you take the action as a user and go find out information about people.
Right.
So if you're curious, you go like look up the characters on Instagram.
So you'd have to follow Scam on Facebook and Instagram because you'd get messages in both places.
Yes.
The New Yorker writes, as with all internet products, once you establish a connection to Scam, it's very hard to sever it. Facebook and Instagram send viewers constant reminders to log back in and stay up to date. Abby Taffy just posted a video. Scam Austin just posted a new episode on Facebook Watch. Of course, notifications, right?
I know where I saw her. F8.
Yes, because
this is all Facebook. Watch.
Yeah. Bingo, right. So they interviewed her.
I can understand why a creator would be very interested in this as a new way of creating content.
Absolutely. It's a different relationship with the people formerly known as the audience.
But
right.
I wonder, it's a lot of work for the audience.
Oh my gosh. But this is the goal of this show was to appeal to teen girls. And that's what happened in Norway.
Was it a success?
Huge success.
Oh, huge.
Like 98% of.
This is a country where a train traveling for 8 hours with a camera on top is also a success. So it's cold there. Well, let's just make this clear. But we love Norway. But
what was the stat that you were about to give us?
I think it was like 98% of the population, the teen population, had heard of it.
Huh.
And I mean, just ridiculous. I don't know how many watched it or what.
Well, get ready, because the creator of American Idol, Simon Fuller, has bought the English language rights.
So that's what we were talking about.
It's already on.
It's Scam Austin is the version that we're talking about.
That's
this
his.
Story, that's on
so it's
Facebook
Simon
Live.
Fuller doing this.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, it is. Oh.
Another creator who is, you know, I mean, he was one of the pioneers of reality-based TV.
But this is how my daughter watches. This is how my daughter entertains herself. She watches tiny little snippets on YouTube, but then she also has, we'll call them characters that she follows. And she is 11, going on 12, but she follows them for their videos on YouTube, and then she'll go find them on Instagram and find them other places. And
it's not aimed at anybody older than that. I mean, it's really aimed at the high school age or earlier. You know, in fact, 17 magazine was never aimed at 17-year-olds. It was aimed at 12-year-olds who were figuring out how to be a 17-year-old.
Well, this is actually aimed at older students because there's like sexual content and stuff like that. Not like crazy pornography stuff, but my 12-year-old would be a little
too old for her, maybe.
Too young she's too young for it. Yes, it is too old for her.
Yeah. Actually, the New Yorker article also mentions Lonely Girl 15.
Of course,
remember Big Brother, the house where roommates were conspiring? That was an early attempt to do this. In fact,
the
treatment I gave NBC when we created the site on MSNBC was that it was a big – this was before Big Brother. It was a – because this was in 1992. It was a big Victorian where web developers lived, loved, and fought, and they created a website, which ended up being the TV show at the end of the day, but you could tune in throughout the day on the web. I wish NBC had bought this. I'd be a rich man by now. You could tune in different times on the web, see what different people were doing, who was fighting with whom. This was 1992, I thought of this. You could listen to their playlists if you had. They were listening to music, like Kevin Rose. He had a certain style of music. You would want to listen to his music. We pitched this. NBC loved the pitch, but they never made the show, unfortunately.
Oh, wow. That's a big deal.
Yeah. I wish they'd gone for it. It's with 95 page treatment. I should find it. But that's what the site it became. But they didn't want to do all the, and it was probably too early for the web to do all that stuff.
All the tech stuff.
Well, I just put up
the site launched in 94, so the web really wasn't widespread enough by then. Now is the time, though. Boy.
Whew. But yeah, so something like this. Now thinking about the IGTV announcement in context with like reading about that and thinking about how my daughter watches television, it feels like we always talk about it undergoing a shift, but that's an interesting way to think about how that shift, what the end product might look like, I guess. Yeah. So now I'm like,
Yeah.
So the Austin,
you put up an interview with the creator in the chat on the rundown.
The Norwegian creator.
And she's very kind of Norwegian stern. It's very interesting. But you can fast forward through and get some sense of
the version she made was public television.
Yes.
So it was it was a healthy, this was
it wasn't healthy.
Well, in the long run it was healthy, right?
Well, it was Norwegian healthy. That's an important distinction.
Well, let me read what the New Yorker says. True to its roots in public television, Scam attempts to educate its audience, and its primary theme that is, if you keep trying, things will come out all right in the end. For instance, in the Norwegian version, the girl who is slut-shamed for kissing someone else's boyfriend faces down her tormentors. A young man who attempts to suppress his homosexuality winds up accepting himself. But there is apparently debate about what's going to happen in Scam Austin. So Scam Austin has not started yet, or has started a little bit?
No, they've already started.
Okay. So it's not too late to follow it, though, if you
can totally follow it.
Because I want to know how to behave in high school.
Yeah, you're going to feel like a real
man. I don't think you do.
There's some question, though, whether this will be as public, educational as it was.
All stories are kind of like that. I mean, think about it. Like,
yeah, they all.
You always. I mean, ending. That's the point of a story, arc, right?
Right. The character learns, and there's.
Oh, and Jeff offered us a clip from Scam Austin.
We're watching it right now. If anybody would be, this is the interview that you were talking about, Jeff. So apparently, there's a sweaty locker room activity with young boys and bottles of water. Oh boy, this is aimed at a teenage girl, right? Oh, and he's the gay kid, I betcha. And he's a little.
It's Norway.
It's Norway, my friends. Wow, this is a little hot. Okay.
Leo's losing his breath.
It's quite sexy.
I can't handle that.
The audience is watching. I don't know if we can air this.
They're all clothed.
They're in tidy whiteies. It's somebody just threw milk against the wall. This is a Norwegian metaphor. And God, he just got hit.
I think teenagers know exactly what this is, and they would appreciate being in the know.
Yeah, so this is suggestive without actually being pornographic. And, so I doubt the American one will be like this, but who knows, right? And then did Facebook work with this Norwegian producer and company?
I know that Fiji Simo interviewed her on stage, and they obviously love that they're doing this.
Of course.
They helped in some way. I don't think they paid him for it or anything. I mean, I could be wrong about that. I don't know. Maybe they did.
Here's the
watch stuff.
Here's the creator. This is at Media Morphosis.
First and foremost, I don't know how many of you know about the show, so we will start from the beginning.
Yeah. So Scam is a drama series that runs online through this webpage. And it's
so it starts on this one. It starts at a web page, not on Facebook Watch.
So Facebook managed to entice them in. Okay.
Well, maybe they were using Facebook as a platform. Yeah, this is, boy, this is in a new era, isn't it? That's very interesting.
It is. It is. It's something created for the medium rather than just trying to repurpose old-time TV.
Yeah, and if you want to follow it in the U.S., you have to go to the Facebook page for Scum Austin, which is S-K-A-M.
Norwegian for shame.
Oh, my God, shame.
Ding.
So if I follow it now, I'm going to get a lot of stuff. By the way, here's a bunch of other shows that are also on Facebook Watch. Man, I feel like, you know what? Twit is now officially old-fashioned.
Old fart.
It is. It's old-fashioned compared
to
this.
We're the cathode ray tube.
Like, yeah. Boy, that was way too fast. For crying out loud, it's only 13 years old. It's a teenager still. Oh, you want to watch a... we can catch up on full episodes of Scam Austin. There's been 8 weeks already.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Let's just watch a little bit. I hope we get the locker room. What's the American version? Mature content.
Mature content.
This video may include profanity.
Facebook Watch prevents. I bet they did pay him.
This need to perform all the time.
12.8 million views of this premiere episode.
Like, today I woke up at 5 to get ready for...
So then, wait a minute. Now I got to tell you, 12.8 million views is network size programming. Not network hit, but network size.
Network size.
And given...
Cable size, certainly.
Bigger than most cable.
Bigger, yeah.
And given that it's... got legs that, you know, it's not like a TV show that airs once. Now, I have to point out that that's the first episode. Next episode, 4.3 million, then 3.8 million, then 1.4 million. It dipped under a million on week 5, went back to 1.4 on 6, under a million week 7, and then 1.2 on week 8. So that's a little bit more in line with what I expect for a web series, roughly a million.
Teenagers at that.
But the aggregate views might be higher because you've also got the Instagram part of it, right? There's more, right? There's some on Instagram, right?
Yes. You can follow the characters on Instagram and see their interactions.
Is there any advertising?
The other characters. I don't know.
I don't see any.
I don't know.
This would be a perfect thing for the advertising to be not overt, interstitial ads.
It's my hometown, you guys.
But paid, you recognize Spanky's graffiti there? Started April 24th. New drops daily. Oh, that was just a tease. Sorry.
So it's daily.
Daily. That's a lot of work.
But they break it up into, they're not half hour episodes. They're like 1 minute.
Let's see what's going on in week 8. So, but what I was saying is that the ads could be product placement. In fact, product placement probably work really well in this. If she's wearing like a sweater that's really cute.
Yeah.
If
you really think that I look at you. Or you look great in that makeup. What is it?
Start behaving like a human being. Quit walking around here like a cliche. It was Megan.
The challenge is going to be getting great writing and great storytelling in this, right? Because.
Well, but they're TV people. They got the people who did the Norwegian one. I don't think that's... I think the challenge is... We don't know the challenge because it's a whole new format, so we got to see how people interact with it.
Ultimately, though, I got to say, ultimately, maybe this is me again being old-fashioned. Story is everything. I mean, you can talk... And we've seen this before with nonlinear forms of storytelling, that the story, the acting, all of that has to work. I still believe it has to work, and you have to get great writers... Admittedly, this is even harder because they have to write in a new form that maybe they're not familiar with. But that you can solve. But you're going to have to get great writers to come to it. You know, what it's reminding me a little bit of, and we were talking about this on Windows Weekly, is another new medium that is about to take off. We talked about it last week. Esports. And the Wall Street Journal had an article today about professional stadiums being built. Arlington, Texas is starting construction on a 100,000 square foot arena for live video gaming.
Jeez.
Competition. See,
it's awesome. Well, it's going to be $1 billion a year. This year, they're going to be close to $1 billion in making $1 billion in esports. It's like 938 million.
Yeah.
It's up 340
something.
Fortnite
alone has put aside $100 million for purses for Fortnite competitions. This looks like it's Overwatch, if you want to watch the Wall Street Journal video. This is an esports event, an Overwatch event. That's League of Legends. Thousands of people show up. Purses are, yes, in the millions. Numbers make sense and they're big. So whenever I hear, look at this.
Well, how would you build a venue specifically for this?
That's the good news. You build a venue and you could use it for other things because it's really a proscenium. You know, it's a stage.
With you want a lot of video, I presume, all around.
Yeah. In fact, well, my one of the things I experienced with this, what made me think of it is, when I watched my whole opinion of this completely came around when I watched the Fortnite Pro-Am last week at E3. I realized, yeah, I get it. This is fun. This is fun to watch. But you're going to have the same exact issues that I saw with SCUMM, which is it's a new medium, and you're going to have to get directors who understand how to follow the action. It was a real problem with the Fortnite thing. Things would happen off screen because there's 100 players diving in and there's 100 battles or 50 battles going on, and the director has to be smart enough to know exactly what to show.
It's
more
like a perfect use for VR where you could
maybe
check out different
maybe,
things.
Maybe, yeah. Or instant replay. I mean, you know, and then commentators, they're going to need to develop. The commentators were actually surprisingly good, but still amateurish. But you're going to need to develop commentators who can, because sports is only as good as the commentators can bring it to life, you know, and get you engaged.
Well,
but they'll get there.
They will. Oh, they'll totally get there.
Because I've every year when the F1 race comes to Austin, I get to go because various tech companies are sponsoring various aspects of it. So one year I was in there talking to the guy who's in charge of all the cameras and directing everything. And the setup they have there, it's this amazing data center that they actually have to be able to put up in 24 hours and then take down in 48. It's crazy. And they put it on like three planes. But what they've got there, he said one of the hardest parts of his job was actually learning both the camera angles they needed, but also understanding the latency of the physical equipment so he could get to where he needed to be and broadcast it quickly, which I didn't really appreciate. But as a nerdy audience, you guys would be like, whoa.
Yeah.
So that was just throwing that in there. That's the same sort of thing with esports.
Another challenge, the esports events can go on as long as 24 hours.
It's like cricket. It's electronic cricket.
Here is the Burbank.
People love cricket.
Here's the Burbank Center where they're playing Blizzard's Overwatch. People bring signs. They cheer. They know who the players are, you know. These players are big stars.
Leo, back to your point about the commentators. I'm not so sure that, you know, our old fart.
My standards may also not apply. It's the same thing.
Yeah. This is like, it's like, you know, who would think that PewDiePie would be a big star, right? It's something different.
No, I completely agree. It's a new medium and new stars will show up. There's a style thing, and I'm not expecting to like or understand their style, but you also have to cover the event. You know, you have to be showing the big thing that's happening. There's a few, you know, just purely technical things they have to do. I think we're close. I think we're close. This is interesting. Watch a new medium being born.
It's super fun, and it'll die in like 10 years. That's the crazy part.
Yeah,
something new will replace it. I love this, and it terrifies me.
Well, it terrifies me because podcasting used to be the next big thing. Now it's over.
Leo, you better get good at Fortnite.
Google's going to double podcasting. So
one thing I've already leapt. I've already made the leap from radio into podcast. I'm done. This is it. I've already made one. No human can expect to transit two different media.
What about William Shatner's doing something with Bitcoin? No. Is that true? Yeah, Bitcoin.
I think that doesn't count. But thanks for trying. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tossing that out there, Stacey.
Here's another old guy better. Like you, Leo. He doesn't think.
He's doing Bitcoin.
He gets paid a fortune for it.
Well, yeah, he's... You know, he's a star already. So, wow, very interesting. I guess in some ways we could say that this show is really about the future in that respect, that we're looking at things that are starting to happen that are going to change our relationship with the outside world. Right?
Sure.
Facebook also says it's opening Facebook Watch to more kinds of content. So I think if you're Facebook, you're smart. We know that they have a game show platform now. This is, to me, I saw this, I thought, this is brilliant. You could compete with HQ, or you could make an HQ-like platform that a million people can make HQ. So this is the game show platform with interactive video. They're launching, so anybody can create their own HQ. Mm-hmm. That's so smart. Fresno's What's in the Box, where viewers get what's inside a box. BuzzFeed News is Outside Your Bubble. Contestants have to guess what their opponents are thinking. Business Insider's Confetti. Viewers answer trivia questions and can see friends' responses with winners splitting the cash. See, HQ is already looking old hat. That's pretty funny.
So let's go through, let's just catalog for a minute all the various video platforms now. You have Facebook doing Facebook Live plus Watch.
Yeah.
You have Instagram doing its new video thing. You have
YouTube,
of course.
Microsoft's doing Mixer. We're on Mixer, by the way, and it's a great platform.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mixer.com/twit.
You have Twitter.
Twitter's all over video. Yeah. What is Twitter's latest on that? Because for a while I was seeing a lot of stuff on Twitter. You know, I'd tune in, Bloomberg would be over there on the side, and I don't see that as much anymore. Is that?
Bloomberg is still doing it, I think.
Oh, are they?
Okay. I see a lot of cheddar.
They're making a lot of money on it.
Are they really?
Yeah, they are. They actually are. Yeah.
Does
I don't see it right now.
Yeah,
I guess nothing comes and right
goes.
Now.
Go to @TikTok, TikTok.
That's their thing, isn't it?
It's there. It's doing it. Yep.
So you have to go to it's not on the front page. It's a specific page. And does Twitter share the revenue on this? Or this is actually, but this isn't what I was talking about. This is just a Twitter feed by TikTok. Yeah,
there used to be under like the who to follow. Yes, you'd right. have a little.
And I imagine that'll happen again. But right now it's not there. I haven't seen
maybe
it.
Maybe it only does it during times it feels that people would watch. Quote
maybe,
unquote TV.
Maybe that's it. I don't know.
But YouTube, I think.
So what, are we done with the list? Periscope's gone, right?
Oh, right. Periscope is gone, I think.
But Periscope and Vim and Vine has started, kind of almost started this. Yes. Oh, Snapchat. We almost forgot.
What is it? There's Vimeo and Twitch and.
Yeah, I guess Vimeo's still around. Is Vimeo. I think Vimeo. They're owned by IAC, right?
PSCP.TV. Is that a reborn
Periscope?
That's
Periscope, yeah.
Yeah, it's still there.
Yeah.
Still there.
I don't know if... I guess Twitter still owns it, yeah.
And then there's Tout, which is bigger than I knew.
I don't know Tout.
Tout's the TV network for the internet.
This confirms what you were saying last week, Jeff, that the AT&T Time Warner merger isn't really threatening because it's the old giants desperately trying to hold on to their business model while it's completely going out from under them.
Yes.
The thing that worries me is that all of the stuff we just described still needs internet access, and the incumbents, the entrenched, you know, existing players are dominant there, and no one's loosening their grip.
Well, you could argue. So here's what you would argue. You'd say, hey, I'm a creator of some sort of video. I want to get an audience. Instead of going to the internet directly, like the way you and I have done, we would go to Facebook or AT&T or right. Comcast.
The beauty of it is you get free, as a content creator, you get free distribution.
Right.
But as consumers...
You have to find it.
It still looks to us
places.
Similar to the way it used to, which is you've got a provider.
And if you don't meet any provider, if no provider loves you, you're just gonna go out on your own.
You don't get it at all. You don't get it at all.
You could still get it.
We talked last week that 5G might change this, right?
We talked about using 5G as a way to bring new people to challenge the incumbents. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
And into areas where wired internet just doesn't exist, as in, well, in the rural areas.
Well, okay. So no, 5G is terrible for rural areas.
Oh, really?
And I'll say this 1,000 times. Oh, it's good for suburban and urban areas, it's like, but it's WiMAX? Terrible for your...
Right.
Yes.
We thought WiMAX was going to solve it too, but it turned out... So 5G, you need so many little micro towers that you just... It's not... It's just as bad as wiring it?
Well, you need... You still need backhaul. So you still need a way to get on... Right. Get your wireless so 5G to the internet. Yes. You still need a wire somewhere.
It solves
in
the
there.
Last mile... It does solve the last mile problem though, right?
It solves the last mile problem, but... The problem with rural areas, it's like the last 25 miles problem.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Tout says it has an audience of 85 million.
What?
It's an app,
right? Versus Facebook 71. I think it's white label for publishers and stuff.
It's the TV Jesus. Network for the internet. And here is, what the heck? I never even heard of that. Personalized TV experience delivers.
I've got a friend who invested in it, and so I know. It delivers, like for newspapers, they do it.
The video programming people love based on who they are and where they are across the web. That's a code for tracking.
Yep.
And advertisers love.
Oh, no, it's evil.
Well, they love it because, and it's one of the reasons we're having trouble. Podcast is going to have trouble because we can't and won't do that kind of tracking.
Yep.
300 channels of premium video programming across news, sports, entertainment, and lifestyle.
But so is it an app? I should know this.
It's an immersive video viewing experience with robust discoverability and multi-channel browsing. It looks like it's an app.
Hold on, T-O-U-T.
Well, it's also on the desktop. On-demand video delivered at just the right moment.
Oh, not on. I think it's white
label
for publishers.
Wait, what is this? Oh, is this, are you watching this? R-U-W-T?
No.
Is that who? Oh, okay.
T-O-U-T.com.
Sorry, yes.
Access,
I stopped paying attention.
Me too. And I'm talking. So Fox is using it. Time's using it. Helping producers access quality audiences beyond their own properties. Oh, so we would be a potential client because they would distribute our video in their tout thing. But look at the analytics, and that's the key. That's really the key.
Curate, whitelist, and blacklist specified domains. Track and monitor all KPIs at the domain level. Always
key
on
performance,
third-party audience.
Key indicator. Performance indicators. That's it.
I chose to go years without asking what that stood for. I just let people use the jargon all the time. But then finally, I had to figure it out.
Oh, I wish I had that luxury.
Audience verification and brand safety analysis.
Yeah, it's Nielsen, basically.
Oh, does that mean it won't like play next to your show won't play next to like a crazy man?
Right.
I don't know. Masturbating right. into a teddy bear.
Well, not only that, but it's also going to be, it's the copyright holders.
Ah.
Right.
Speaking of copyright.
This is just wind me up.
And now, it's not
is
the
it
law.
Time for this?
It's not the law yet in the European Union, but
though Section 13 just got passed by a key committee.
The committee has passed it on, and the members of the European Parliament will have to vote sometime between December of this year and the first half of 2019. This is Article 11 and 13 passed by the jury committee. But the European Parliament has to have a plenary vote, and that won't happen until later this year.
Let me say it. This is the Leistungsschutzrecht gone nuclear and Europe-wide. And it requires such things as every anyone who takes content in must have pre-moderation checks for copyright, number one. And number two, it is a link tax and enables publishers to try to charge the likes of Google. This is why Google News left Spain, and now it's going to go Europe-wide. It is an effing disaster.
But more importantly, it will kill memes.
Yes, it will. Because, cats will be dead because of this.
You won't be able to post a meme because these automated content filtering mechanisms, Google uses it on YouTube right now, don't know the difference between parody, legitimate use, and copyright violation. And it's all
already dead in Germany. Yep.
Yep. It's all treated as copyright violation. Although, I mean, it's unclear if they're what the remediation, you know, what the appeal process is and all that stuff.
I was in Tel Aviv just yesterday.
Yeah.
And I gave a talk on Monday, and I went through the unintended consequences of all the EU regulations, legislation, and courts, you know, and I ended up debating with a major French official and with a major EU official over this stuff. But basically you're seeing that some providers, it's just like American publishers are pulling out of Europe. You're going to see people pull out of Europe. I was talking to somebody today who has a big company. He's going to Latin America. He's going to Asia. Screw it. He's just not going there because it's not going to be worth it. The regulation is so difficult. And once again, the effort is to reduce the power of the big platforms. The big platforms will end up with more power because they're the only ones who can afford to deal with this stuff. Thank you.
It's not too late. Because it hasn't been voted into law yet. And just as we often exhort our American viewers to call their member of Congress, you should call, European viewers should call your members of the European Parliament and say, explain so they understand why this is a terrible idea.
Israel is considering legislation to require pre-monitoring of all content put on. France is considering fake news legislation to penalize people for publishing fake news. They think they could control the world.
Well, they're making a good faith effort to fix a problem. They're just doing it in a really stupid way.
And I don't know that we have the data that says that the problem is as big as this presumption is.
Well, I think right now everything's so in flux, it's hard to define how to... We see something's wrong. The outcomes are not what we're after. We don't understand yet what causes those outcomes because this is so new and so fast moving. So they're just taking a stab at it.
But it's a stab that has huge impact.
It does.
I do fault them because they're also... you know, the thing I heard about legislators in all across Europe, as in the U.S., as in Israel, is they all don't know how the internet works. They're ignorant as hell about the internet. And one of them, you know, yelled back on that point. You know, this is awful. You're telling us we have to wait and be patient. No, we have to take charge of this and we have to run the world and this is terrible. And the presumptions are terrible. Like one person I was debating with was going on about how basically was calling all 2 billion people on Facebook stupid. And chumps for being there. I said, no, people are there for a reason. They're doing something they want to do. If you don't start from that understanding, then try to figure out what's what, and you come in and say, I'm going to stop them all from doing this, that's ridiculous. But it's a terribly paternalistic thing. You're right. It's all well-intentioned, Stacey. I agree with that. But the intention and the intelligence are far apart on this stuff. And the damage can be huge.
I think we need less.
What?
We need less people in office who are powerful and proud and think they know so much. I think one of the challenges we're facing is we're shifting from a society that's, like you said, very paternalistic to one where people want to have more say and need to have more say because the experience is so much more customized to so many different people. And so we're moving, again, from mainstream and mass to something more fragmented.
I don't know how it works in the European Parliament, but here in good old America, members of Congress are not really looking out for the people. For some are, I suppose, but for the most part, they're protecting the company. That's what they do. They're protecting companies
and institutions.
And
the institutions.
And they're that's what this law does is. It's IP law to protect the institutions and the copyright holders.
Yes, they're bought by newspapers and media companies. Right,
and they don't care what meme makers think. That's not their. There's not. It's only nominally their constituency. I would guess is what I'm saying. Their actual constituency isn't the institutions, isn't it?
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Or is that a really cynical point of view?
No, you're completely right.
It is a cynical point of view, but it's true.
They almost paint it in populist terms, though.
Well, yeah, let's be realists about it.
That's a veil.
Excuse me for not knowing this. I presume that members of the European Parliament are voted in. It's a democratic institution.
Yes, that's true.
And so just as in the United States, they probably care about votes, ultimately, if they want to keep their job.
But well, I don't know what the turnout is for EU elections. I think it's very low.
It's gotta be low. I mean, I don't know either. You know, I mean, that's what's happened in the United States. Its turnout is so low now that, of course, you're going to
wait. 43%.
Much better than the U.S.
Yeah, it is. I take it back, Europe. I take it back. You care.
It's still not even a majority of the eligible voters, but it's somebody's voting. But I don't know. Do you really care? I mean, you still want to serve the institutions. Even if you're kind of forward-thinking and not cynical and altruistic, you think, well, the institutions are what makes this world work.
Well, so in some cases they are, and in some cases the institutions have been denigrated by people who have an interest against them or nihilistic people,
right,
which is kind of what's happening here.
Right.
Yep.
But what Jeff is talking about is curbing media platforms and kind of some of the spread of these data companies and the internet and what's happened with Google and Facebook. And so that's a little bit different than...
I guess you could argue to a politician, well, you want to promote innovation. You want to promote the next thing. You want to do stuff that's going to create jobs. So you don't want to completely tilt the law in favor of the entrenched.
Well, that's silly because you can protect innovation and kill jobs. I mean, those are just things that we shout when we're too lazy to actually look at the
yes,
the terms in the legislation. So well, whenever yeah, someone okay. says kill innovation, okay. I'm just like, I don't care.
Okay.
Just yes. ignore them and yeah. get to the root of the problem.
Okay. I mean, yes, you're right. If you want to preserve coal miners' jobs, innovation is not the way around it to do it.
Right. It could be, actually.
Well, it could you be could, if you invent clean coal, but
you could train them.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you're right. Jobs may not be, jobs is a voter, no, just, a voter but, issue, not no, necessarily but, a politician's issue.
But politicians all, I mean, having just covered the net neutrality fight for like a decade, I mean, killing innovation, investing in innovation, these are just common tropes that mean nothing. You actually, the problem is laws, the words themselves matter, and nobody actually wants to dig into the words because it's excruciatingly dull. So, and that's people in the vote, like voters don't vote on that either. No. They don't care about that. No, and it's not wrong detail. For Congress to be like, no. oh, yeah, yeah. So, I don't know what the solution here.
So Stacey, yeah, there was one of the EU politicians at this event in Tel Aviv argued angrily from stage, first, that technology is killing democracy, and second, that technology created populists.
Those are contrary points of view, aren't they?
Absolutely, and wrong, and then got really mad that I used the phrase, as do you guys, moral panic. This is not moral panic. It was the definition of it. It was the definition of moral panic, where he was blaming all of society's problems on the platforms. The fall of democracy, bad behavior, Russians, populists, everything was the fault of the platforms. And it's human behavior. And government is there to regulate human behavior. When they don't know how to do it, they pull this kind of number.
Well, but okay, so we in the United States, I don't know enough about how it works in the EU, but in the United States, it's a representative democracy. We don't expect voters to know the details of each law, arcana. They are there to, in theory, set the overall 30,000 foot policy point of view, what we want to work toward. And then we're hiring people whose job it is, create staff and create laws that achieve our vision thing, right? So I don't think that's broken. I think that works all right.
No, I think it's broken because a lot of people, we're not actually talking about the laws anymore. We're talking about, we're sloganeering. So it's one thing, and we don't talk.
That's the vision thing. That's 30,000 foot.
We don't talk about the trade-offs. You have to talk about the trade-offs when you're talking about a 30,000 foot view still. And we don't do that in our politics because either our politicians don't think we can handle it.
Well, that's true.
I don't know why we. No, I mean, it's one thing to say.
We've gotten away from issue debates and really more towards sloganeering. I agree with you on that. Yeah.
So that's like, if we want to figure out a solution to this, we actually have to start framing our issues as, hey, I believe this matters.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that this is going to hurt the following five constituencies,
right,
but I believe it's worth it because of this.
That's and a then good you way get to.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, that's like debating 101,
right,
but we don't do that.
Well, I believe that we should foster technologies that allow us to innovate things like new forms of media. I believe that that may cost people like me a job in the short run, but in the long run, it's part of the refreshing and renewing process that will create new kinds of jobs for another generation. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yes, like or debt neutrality, you know, if we're talking same about
thing.
That.
Same thing. I'm more interested in what the future of a free and open internet can bring us than the potential risk of loss of revenue to Comcast, Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint.
Or the loss of something like zero rating for yourself.
Right.
That's a hard thing for some people to hear.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But at least here we have those conversations at that
we
level
We do in
all
some,
the time.
I mean, we do. And I wish we had them in other places, because I think it's fine to have a viewpoint, but I think it's ridiculous for us to all run around just shouting. And that's, it's not the sole, everything's wrong with our, the sole thing that's wrong with our country, but that's a big challenge to an informed debate. And that's hurting us badly.
It's always been, though, at least as long as there's been mass media, it's always been one of the ways politicians manipulate the electorate is with fear, you know, yellow journalism.
Yes.
Some proportion of the electorate is always going to fall for that. And, you know, the debate over the family separation and the border is a really good example of, I think that it is too, you could say it's sloganeering and there's fear mongering and there is a lot of that going on. But I think there's also, if you cut through all of that, two different points of view that are at odds with one another that are not, you know, I mean, I have one that, so I don't like the other, but that are points of view that you could reasonably hold. One that our borders need to be protected and the laws need to be enforced. And the other that, I personally don't think our borders should be protected. I think there's evidence that migrants actually improve the economy. Those are two different points of view, but we're not arguing that because there's a lot of this emotional.
Well, and you could also expand it because there is also a worldview that right now we are experiencing such radical change from climate, from technologies, from destabilization in governments, that migration and mass migration is going to become a real issue from a lot of the poorer parts of the world to the richer parts of
the
world.
Right, exactly, which is why that's why I don't dismiss the protect our borders argument. I understand that argument. You know,
so, but we're not fighting over that right now.
No, I know.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Well, some people are. I don't think that's true. I think some people are. I think that at root, you get down to it, that kind of is what the debate is about.
Right. But I don't think we're acknowledging that at all. I think we're just talking about borders. But what we really need to be thinking about is what happens when we make a large portion of the world uninhabitable for various reasons.
The problem is, though, if you make it too complex and everybody gets frozen because it's too much to figure out. I mean, you have to dumb it down a little bit, Stacey.
I think we have to start from that. We have to create categories based on that. And we have to circle back around to that. It is complicated. It's horrifyingly complicated. But if we don't understand that, we can't actually create realistic policies.
How can a democracy or even a republic work if you don't kind of boil it down to some simple concepts and say, well, here's your choice, A or B?
Trump and the people who are so freaked out about borders right now, yes, we can talk about being racist, we can talk about all of this, but at their core is a very real fear that this macro change is going to lead our country
to be very disruptive. Yeah.
I think the reason you see nationalism rising is because the nation as an institution is challenged.
Right.
And so, Stacey, you're right. I mean, this is, but it's at a macro level that it's hard to put into what Leo wants, which is, you know, things like short phrases like death panel to have a discussion, right?
Well, it'd be nice to avoid the heavily emotionally charged phrases. But I notice the Guardian, I mean, it becomes today, emotionally charged. When you see Rachel Maddow burst into tears on television, it's hard to say it's not emotionally charged. You know,
and, well, and it's very upsetting.
It's upsetting. I'm upset. I was upset.
Reveal, the Center for Investigative Reporting just put up a report based on federal court filings of children being injected with cocktails of drugs to pacify them.
Yeah.
In these centers. The Guardian today published a complete accounting of 34,361 documented deaths of refugees and migrants because of Fortress Europe, right? Meanwhile, you have Trumpists and the AfD in Germany and Brexiters and so on. Speaking of moral panic, it's not technology in this case. It's turning the other, the stranger, into an enemy who's going to steal your job and steal your home and steal your child and steal your daughter.
Yeah, I understand.
Whatever.
So, but right? So Jonathan Haidt talks about this a little bit, and what he said, really though, you can boil it down to some fundamental disagreements in worldview. And is that reasonable to debate those? That's reasonable to debate those. We should probably get rid of all of the highly charged rhetoric, because
you have to understand the big worldviews. I think it'd be easier if you can recognize when you're hitting up against an issue where you can change someone's mind in a worldview where they're probably, that's like core to who they are.
He kind of says that's one of the things he says. He says, we have this notion that we're reasonable creatures, that we act upon reason. He says, really, reason is a little person trying to drive the giant elephant of emotion. And what reason often ends up doing is justifying the way the elephant's going, because emotion's going to take us there. It's reason's job to say, this is why, rather than to try to steer the dang thing.
This is why I argue that there's three, you know, my new definition of journalism: to convene communities into civil, informed, and productive conversation, and civility comes first. What should be happening now? Journalism's role and Facebook's role should be trying their best to introduce people to these brown strangers at the border and make us understand their humanity.
But I think that's misunderstanding.
Go to Guatemala and make them understand.
I agree. They should
be. These are people.
I agree. They should be. But it's kind of misunderstanding how these businesses are formed. Even ABC, CBS, and NBC are not really formed in the public wheel. They're formed as profit-making businesses.
Right. But I don't think profit. Yes, but every journalist, so is the New York Times, so is every media company for the last 200 years has been. That's why journalists believe they have standards that
right.
have them rise above that.
Transcend that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. With mixed success.
Amen, brother. Amen.
I think when you get to Facebook, you're asking Facebook, a lot of Facebook, you certainly can ask a New York Times reporter to understand that, but the average Facebook employee doesn't come from that background.
But if Facebook says that they... Right. This is my argument that I've made. Facebook's definition of community is too shallow and temporal, that it's about conversation. And that's going to get us in trouble, just like clickbait does. I can make you converse because I can make you angry, right?
Right. But we didn't think it would. I mean, that may be something that's come to light recently. But
if you look at groups, right? If you look at groups on Facebook where there's bad stuff there, right? But what could groups be on Facebook? It truly could be. And I see this happening in anonymous groups, where you see communities truly coming together and doing things.
Isn't it the nature, though? It seems to be the nature of the beast that all social, all commons areas on the internet end up descending into this. And they always have after a period of years, no matter what. I mean, it's going back to...
Even Google Plus now.
Yeah, going back to the news groups. Google Plus is awful. But it's mostly because it's untended.
Yeah, exactly.
But the news groups...
I think there may be ways to design this. I think
I'm really curious about that, frankly. Is it possible to have a social network that doesn't, after a period of years, decline into madness?
So did the well, as much as the well drove me
The
nuts.
Well did, yes.
Yes, it did.
GigaOm never did.
Today?
Which didn't?
GigaOm didn't.
Was GigaOm a social community?
No. Well, we had lots of commenters who talked to us all the time. But yeah,
I think GigaOm didn't last long enough. I think if it had lasted longer, it might have. YouTube did, Twitter did, The Well did, news groups did. Every time you have these wonderful conversations and beautiful areas where people are communicating, somehow, for some reason, maybe it's, I don't know, I would love to know why.
I think it's openness. I think that, openness will, complete openness or near complete openness will lead to manipulation. And bad guys come in and they trash it.
Right.
And you have to invest.
So Aunt Pruitt says that's a feature of society as a whole. Is that true?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. If you hang out, I mean, if you get a large enough group together, I mean, you get four of your friends together.
It turns into a mob.
Well, I was going to say your four friends are like, and then you have a party and then some guy gets really trashed and then you're
as a kid in the 60s participating in war protests. That got out of hand because it's very easy in a mob for a mob to get out of hand. No one person has the responsibility. And it's very much like Twitter or some sort of social network. It spins out of control. And then you do things as part of a mob that you would never do by yourself ever. Like set cars on fire, you know,
speak for yourself. Jerry the Red.
I never set a car on fire, but I saw things like that happen, and you kind of sweeps you up. You get swept away in the mob. Have you ever been in a?
Well, I covered the so-called gay riots in San Francisco after Dan White was acquitted of the murder of Harvey Milk and George Moscone, and yeah, there were cars on fire. There was such anger that it came out.
If there were cars on Twitter, they'd be on fire right now.
But the question you really ask, which is the right one, it's a society problem and a design problem. And how much control, without it being too much control, can you put on an interactive platform such that this is where I've told you about spaceship media, right?
No,
have I told you this one? Perfect. So Spaceship Media is a wonderful organization. It's a couple journalists in San Francisco formed it. And their first test was getting 25 women who voted for Trump in Alabama, 25 who voted for Clinton in San Francisco. And the journalist interviewed them all, got to know them. And then they threw them all into a private Facebook group. And for the first day, they were talking nicely about their kids and soccer and such and their jobs and their homes and their towns, and then it descended, right? but, my friend, then people from the group came to the journalist and said, can you help us out over here? We're getting in trouble. Can you look up some stuff for us? Yeah. The heavens opened and the angels sang because people said that they wanted an informed conversation, they trusted and desired facts, and they trusted the journalist to get it for them. Why? Because the structure that the journalist had set up was to get them all, know them, understand them, introduce them, respect them, and expect something higher of them. And it's continued for a long time. They've done further work with teachers and African-American students in high schools. They're doing a thing now, which, full disclosure, we helped fund at News Integrity Initiative at CUNY, which is part of the Tom Knight Center, which is part of the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism. Full disclosure, funded in part by Facebook and Craig Newmark. We funded an effort to do 5,000 people now.
See, that's what I'm curious about, is if it will scale.
That's what we're trying to see. Yeah. So a couple of my former students are in that. Meanwhile, in Germany, Die Zeit, or Zeit Online, they did something called Deutschland spricht, and I'm making this into a platform worldwide in any language. But they went and quizzed people about five questions, binary. Germany has enough migrants. Germany has more room for migrants, right? They found people who registered who disagreed with each other. And of the 12,000 who registered, 1,200 agreed to meet someone with whom they disagreed near them on a Sunday in Germany. No fistfights. My favorite story from here is that the algorithm matched one woman with her father-in-law. right? So there are, I think that I see the Coral Project as an effort with Mozilla, New York Times, Washington Post have been involved, trying to come up with new architecture around conversation. A lot of the argument that they make is that you can't just involve people at the end of the process and say, here, talk about this, because they're going to yell because they had no role. You've got to involve people earlier in their process.
So is it too late for Facebook and Twitter, or can these techniques be adapted to the existing?
That's a really good question. So I talked to Deb Roy, who's at the MIT Media Lab, who was kind of a chief data guy for Twitter. And his argument was that every capitalistic enterprise is built to a simple metric, and that Facebook and Twitter are already built to a metric, and that they kind of can't be rebuilt to this extent. But he saw opportunity, and he's doing a lot of projects. He's got one called Cortana. No, that's Microsoft.
Yeah.
I'll remember it in a second. Which is trying to look at civility in conversation, and also he's doing automated analysis of talk radio. Oy. All kinds of fascinating things. Oy. Around. Yeah, oy, indeed. Oy, indeed. Oy,
as somebody who works in talk radio, oy.
Yeah. Oy. But he thinks there are ways to engineer new things, but that's, I go back to my Gutenberg thing. It's 1474. It's early. We've just begun to find ourselves in this thing. Don't know what it is yet.
Is this new media.twitter.com? Is this a new thing from Twitter?
Yes, I put it in there today.
Is this kind of along? So what's your field? How you can use Twitter?
This is business development.
It's biz dev.
But it's not a bad thing.
Help journalists tell their stories on Twitter.
So Stacey, the question to me is how your daughter and her friends develop their norms of acceptable communication with each other through all these media. I think they're going to figure it out. I think they're going to know where the boundaries are and where the trouble begins and start to see how to help each other avoid that. I have that faith.
I don't know. That's a really interesting question. And I'll let you know as I see things evolve right now. Right now, they communicate so much. What intrigues me is they communicate so much via like IM and not texting because not all her friends are on the phone. But like, they just, you know, I don't know how they can tell when they're sarcastic, but they know. And so it's very.
As they get a little older, they can get really nasty with each other too. So there's worse to come, right? Have you that middle school
nastiness?
Father, yeah. She's going into seventh grade, and
it's just beginning.
Yeah, so there's definitely things that, it's the same story played out in a different medium, so we'll see how that works.
The eighth grade trip brings out the worst in young humanity, right, Leo?
They're going to Barcelona, so
nice.
You're kidding
There's
me.
Nothing that Jamón Ibérico cannot cure.
What is that mom?
Yeah, really?
Well, it's an immersion Spanish school, so they go to Mexico City in seventh grade.
Learn Catalan.
So then they go to
That's
Barcelona
great.
And eight.
I didn't know that. How's your Spanish, Mom?
Terrible.
Muy malo?
Nope. I speak French.
Very useful at the Texas.
Yes. Yes. When I was growing up in Texas, I decided that I would take French
years. That was such a good decision.
We had this debate over with my daughter when she was in high school. Her mother, wisely, as it turned out, said, you should learn Spanish. I said, no, learn French. It's the language of culture, the language of the arts.
The language of Laporte.
Your name is Laporte. So Abby learned French. She ended up spending a year in France in high school, where she learned to smoke and drink wine and kiss boys. And then she realized that maybe it would be more useful to learn Spanish. So that gave her, she spent a year in Spain and a year in Merida and a year in Mexico in Puebla. So she speaks Spanish and French. And actually, that's worked out quite well.
Yeah, I get a little confused because when I'm in Mexico or any other Spanish, that's the problem. I'm like sitting there doing this. I don't know what the combination of French and Spanish is, but it's not pretty.
French.
Neither culture appreciates it.
Spench. Stop Spench. Speaking Spench. Disney is upping its offer. So I love this saga. Ooh. So
yeah,
the saga is, of course, it starts last Monday when AT&T Time Warner is approved by a judge. The deal goes through on Friday of last week. It's official. And immediately Comcast, which said, even admitted, we're watching to see what the court says. As soon as the court said, green-lighted it, Comcast upped its bid to $65 billion over Disney's $54.5 billion. Disney has sweetened its offer. This is the Disney offers a merger. The Comcast is a hostile takeover. But, of course, it's shareholders and the board that will decide.
You know what bothers me in either case? That the man who single-handedly ruined American democracy only gets richer.
It all goes to Rupert, but at least Rupert won't have a movie studio anymore.
And, well, no, if the Disney deal goes through, he is by far the largest shareholder.
Yes. Well, now this has changed a little bit. So Disney is now offering $71.3 billion, but it's half cash, half stock.
Oh.
So they changed the proportion. And Disney is pretty determined to get 21st Century Fox. And, I doubt it has to do with Hulu, although it would be the case that if Comcast got Fox, it would get 60% of Hulu, would have majority stake. If Disney gets it, it would only have 30%. Disney wants to have some other. I don't think they'd have a majority stake. I think Disney wants the movie studio, right, more than anything else. It does not include television, does not include Fox Sports. It does include Sky.
It doesn't include television?
Some television, but not Fox News.
It doesn't include Fox News.
But it includes The Simpsons and all Fox of their crazy
cable. So Fox.
And by the way, you saw Steve Levitan, the creator of Modern Family, announced that he was leaving Fox, period.
Oh, but wait a minute. Then he tweeted, never mind. I'm looking forward to working with Fox again. These people.
Oh, no. Really?
I'm pretty sure. I don't want to put words into his mouth.
Steve Levitan is his Twitter handle.
Yeah, he creator of Modern Family, and he was so upset with Fox's coverage of the border crisis that he said and urged others who work for Fox to stop making content enrich the Murdoch family.
No, he said it's been a wonderful home for most of my career. So many people da 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 da.
Oh yeah,
I look forward to seeing Modern Family through to the end. That's to say his contract. And then sale or no sale, setting up shop elsewhere.
That's his most recent. Yep. Whew, he did not back down.
Oh, thank goodness.
So Seth MacFarlane kind of kicked it off. He's of course, the creator of The Family Guy. Also on Fox, right? Is The Family Guy on Fox? Yeah.
Yes, that is a Fox show through and through.
Although I have to point out that the people who support this policy have no respect at all or love for Hollywood establishment. It just confirms their beliefs.
Fine.
There's a guy who heckled the Broadway play that Robert De Niro produced. He stood up and had waved an American flag and a Make America Great Trump 2020 banner. I tell you, it's descending. It's the whole thing.
It's a generalized civility problem. Yeah.
So Comcast must now decide how much higher it can go without upsetting shareholders, according to the LA Times.
What happened to the stock of the three companies?
Good question. Stock prices for Disney and Fox were up after the announcement. Fox stock jumped 8%. Disney rose 1%. I don't know how Comcast did. Early trading on Comcast held steady as investors tried to interpret whether Disney's substantially higher offer means Comcast will be out.
There's nobody else who can come in. This is just too rich.
That's gotten very rich.
Apple, Amazon, Google, or Twitter.
Yeah, but they don't.
Well, not Twitter, what am I saying, but no.
Well, so Comcast would become, they were talking that they would become the world's most indebted companies. So
The Wall Street
Journal did
week.
A story. Right. Yeah, we did talk about that.
Yep.
Which is what killed newspapers.
And Comcast stock is already down 20% this year. So there's definitely a downside to Comcast's debt.
Yeah, Stacey, I think that's a really important point. Because if you look at companies like Tronc and Digital First, where I used to be an advisor, and Gatehouse, it's the debt that did the man. The cash flow was fine, going
down.
Same
thing with Clear Channel. Yep.
So, yeah, Comcast on Monday after it was announced, their stock went down
It went down because of their upped bid.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
So when Comcast raised its bid, that tanked their stock. So the stock market's basically saying they want to see a Disney acquisition.
And then today... Yes, it's flat. Today, almost immediately afterwards, it went up.
It went up.
Today at 1 o'clock, it was trading at 32.40, and at 3 o'clock, it was 33.63. So what's that?
It's $1.20.
5%.
Yeah. What about this? What about this?
What about this?
Atul Gawande. The doctor and writer is now CEO of Amazon's employee healthcare joint venture with J.P. Morgan and Berkshire Hathaway.
With no profit pressure, the heck is...
He is a very well-known New Yorker writer. He's author of four New York Times bestsellers and a surgeon practicing general and endocrine surgery at Brigham and Women's Hospital, professor at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health and Harvard Medical School, and now he's going to run Amazon's healthcare initiative. What is this guy the Energizer Bunny or what?
Well, I assume he'll stop doing some of the other things.
Nope. Gawande will continue all his current roles.
Including surgeon?
Yeah, except he will become chairman of Ariadne, which I didn't even mention, transitioning from executive director. Well, some people just have a lot of energy.
I imagine he's just kind of a figurehead. He's a Zaphod for them.
I don't know. Is that what you call it, a Zaphod?
Well, like Zaphod.
Like Zaphod Beeblebrox?
Beeblebrox, yes.
He's just a figurehead. I'm really curious what Amazon's. It's from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah, don't even worry.
Amazon has already begun automating its white collar jobs. You got to like that.
But in a way, any job that was predictive, this has kind of been happening too.
Yep. And right, Google has just invested more than $500 million in the number two e-commerce site in China, JD.com. JD.com is also well known because last week it announced it was shipping over 200,000 packages a day from its Shanghai facility using four humans and a bunch of robots.
Jeez.
Google money gonna come in handy. It's
a lot of robots with that.
Yeah. Warehouse jobs. You know, let's bring jobs back to China. What do you say?
Well, Trump wants to bring them back to a phone company and the Senate doesn't want to.
I know. Isn't that a funny battle? Senate won, too, by the way. They put that in the Armed Forces Appropriation Bill.
So I want my favorite story of the day?
Your favorite? What is it? Wait a minute. Don't say. Let's take a break. And when we come back, Jeff Jarvis's favorites. You know, this is a...
And maybe we'll talk about Google.
And maybe we'll have... I just mentioned Google. $500 million. I just mentioned Google. May mention some more Google. This is an example of how vestigial broadcasting skills do not translate in the digital world. Because now people are just going to skip through the commercial. Let's find out what Jeff's... If this was scum, they'd have to listen. You must listen to the commercial.
You'd find a way to say, you know, let's move to a new house. I don't know if I can afford it.
You got it. Well, let's find out. Everybody on scum should go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. The new way to finance or refinance a home loan. Quicken Loans, number one lender in the country, number one in volume, number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power, year after year. Number one online mortgage lender, according to Inside Mortgage Finance. I mean, number one in so many ways, but now they're number one in my geek heart because they've created an entirely online mortgage approval process. They call it Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. You can fully understand everything that's going on. There's no mystery. No scurrying off. No banker scurrying off to saying, well, let me check the rates. You don't even have to scurry off to the attic to get your financial documents. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. They crunch the numbers using powerful computing technology. And within minutes, based on income, assets, and credit, they can analyze all the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's right for you. You choose the term, the rate, the down payment, and you are approved, my friend. Fast enough so that you could do this at an open house, and before you leave, show the realtor that big green "You're Approved" button. They even have a button below it that says, print this out for your realtor if she's still living in the 20th century. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. It's actually fun to apply for a mortgage on Rocket Mortgage. Under 10 minutes in many cases. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. Time to refi too. Interest rates are going up. rocketmortgage.com/twig. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org. Number 30. 30. RocketMortgage.com/Twig, T-W-I-G. Jeff Jarvis, how about your favorite story of the week?
It has to do with Google, Stacey. It's not about being able to get Windows on my Pixelbook. Ha! I could care less.
Although it's that may happen.
We'll come to that in a minute. It's not about Google predicting when I'm going to die, because that saddens me.
Did you do it? Because I want to know when I'm going to die.
No. It doesn't really do that.
Oh, okay.
What excites me immensely is catching up for 3 years. I will admit, with Apple fanboys, I can now finally do messaging, texting from the web.
Yes, me too.
Okay.
I'm glad
and
you said
I
that.
Did it, okay. And it makes me very happy.
Now, wait one minute. This is the new Android Messenger, which is...
Yes.
I want to use, because it's RCS, which means it's the new standard for rich communication services. It supersedes SMS. And now that it has a desktop, I really like that. But I'm a Google Fi customer, Jeff. I have multiple phones. As far as I can tell, Messages is tied to one phone number.
I thought it was tied to one account.
Well, it asks for my... All right. So you think I could use it in the same way as I use Hangouts? Because you're a Fi user, aren't you?
Yeah, let me get out my other Fi. My other phone's a Fi phone. After I got my old one back, since I lost my Fi phone.
I mean, you could... Story. It does beg the question. Why didn't they just make Hangouts be the default messenger? But
I had lent son Jake an Android phone so he could develop, and I asked for it back. One of my Fi.
All right. So I'm going to put Messages... Android Messages and say, okay, you're now my default. But see, what I want is, because I have an iPhone, there's no Messages for iPhone, is there? I have other Android devices.
I don't care. I don't care about you Apple people. You turncoats. I don't care.
No, but I just want to use it everywhere.
I live la vida Google.
I want to get all my messages on all my phones. That's the thing. And that's what Hangouts let me do.
I'm waiting for the old phone.
Oh, wait, it says it rolls. Is it rolling out to, is it rolled out to everyone?
It only about a half hour before the show did roll out to me. If you go to Messenger and hit the menu on the right, it'll have a message that says Messages for Web. And that has you take a picture of the QR code on the web page to tie that to, I think, your account, not the phone. But we're going to find out in a minute here. Though I will have the old message on
this
phone.
Yeah, because I got the QR code that pops up.
On the...
And it says, on the desktop, and then it says, pair it with your phone, which makes me think it's to the phone.
No, all you're doing is taking a picture from your message account of your web account and tying it not to the phone number, I think, but instead to your Google account. But I could be very wrong. We shall see.
My Messenger, Messages account is tied to my phone number.
Yeah.
But I don't have this option yet, so I feel sad.
Well, anyway.
You're right. Right. Maybe the case. Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, I wish that...
Because I was reading about this, and I'm like, I've wanted this for everything.
Hangouts is on iOS. Hangouts is on Android. It's on all my phones.
True, you got it.
I use my Google Fi number.
Yep, I got it now, yeah.
It gives it everywhere. That's what I want, and I can use it on the desktop. Then it's perfect. I just would like... I mean, I just don't understand Google. I just don't. I don't.
No, I love Hangouts. I actually think it's lovely.
It works fine, I guess.
It works.
You're right, I can't switch.
As long as you're using Fi. Are you using Fi?
No, I love it even though I'm not using Fi.
They say don't use it if you're not using Fi? I think they did. But
wait, or Hangouts?
Hangouts. They want Hangouts to be the business solution.
Well, then I'm using it for business and to talk to my child.
Yeah, it's unclear. Just unclear. It's unclear. I use Hangouts. Right. I'm going to stick with Hangouts. Elizabeth Holmes and Sonny Balwani indicted and accused of fraud for Theranos. So Google is training machines to predict when a patient will die. The new type of algorithm created by Google read up on the patient's medical record, 175,000 data points, and said her risk, death risk is 19.9%. And guess what? She died.
Well, that's only the 80% said she wouldn't, so I think the patient got that wrong. What's interesting is it uses all the even old, handwritten, hand-notated charts and picks up things in the PDF.
Yeah.
as data points to use, and it tells them why it thinks it made this decision.
I guess Google's saying this
IBM Watson has been doing that for a while.
Yeah. But do you really want Watson to say?
I'm just saying.
You're gonna die?
IBM Watson actually had to walk back their health business recently, so people aren't buying it. IBM Watson healthcare. Hold on. Okay, well, keep talking about death. And
admittedly, it was an improvement over the hospital's computers that read her vital signs. They estimated this is so gruesome. It's so morbid. They estimated that she would die during her stay. The chances she would die during her stay were 9.3%. And like I said, Google said 19.9%. So I guess in that respect, Google wins. But
you don't
so
like,
what?
I mean, well.
What are they doing with that prediction? Oh, let's not
that's
give
where
her
the death
good,
panels we talked about earlier
give her the
in.
Good chicken tonight. Well, I mean,
if someone's going to
only
die,
one Jello for
chicken.
Martha tonight.
Like, let them enjoy their last.
Why waste good Jello on somebody who's going to die? But only 19% chance. That's the part. That's the problem. I don't get this.
Wait a second.
This
Wait
is link bait.
Leo.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm going back to Google
messages. Yes, Android messages.
So I have my Fi phone with message on it. I have my phone with message on my AT&T phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
The message app on both of them has the same messages.
Good. Then maybe it is. Maybe it is doing that then.
So I don't know how, but it's under my account.
Yeah. If it were account-based, that would be
it's
good.
Account-based going through that phone. So I think that's what it's doing. I could be wrong. I could be very, very wrong. And I will stand corrected if it is.
So you can also send GIFs, GIFs, and GIFs if you wish. There's a YIF search. Can I call them YIFs? There's
no,
a YIFs.
Just pick one.
YIF. There's a YIF search built in. I'm going to call it YIFs. No? No, YIF is good. That's how the Greeks say it. YIF? Is that a bad word?
No, you're just going to add fire to this debate.
Really? It's a bad word? In what language is it a bad word? Oh, I'm so sorry. Apparently, Karsten speaks the furry tongue.
Oh, my God. Is it something in furry?
Apparently.
I'm not going to Google this. Quick, no Googling.
Nobody Google
Don't
this.
Go to Urban Dictionary. Okay, so I can't call it that. HIF. Can I call it HIF?
Okay, so you can send these little pictures that loop.
Yes, you can send little looping pictures. This is the one reason I want to use it, Smart Reply. That's the thing that they do on Google Mail as well, the Smart Reply. So, you know, somebody texts you and says, where are you? And then you could push a button that says, be there soon or on my way, which would be great.
Which I've
had
already.
I have been doing that.
You have that already
I have that.
Not in my messenger on the phone. Yeah. Yes.
Preview links within the conversation. This is part of that rich communication services, I'm sure, RCS.
Oh, I was looking in the wrong place to see if I have it. Oh. You have to go to the web. I was looking on the
Yeah, you do it in your browser. Phone. Yeah. You do it in your browser. And then you'll
get
right.
But you have to go. Your mobile app has to have, under the top right menu, it has to have, which it didn't have for me earlier today.
It doesn't have this.
Messages for web.
Okay, don't show my screen.
You hit that and take a picture
of
the
QR. It's got a QR code. Okay, on your phone, open Messages, tap the More menu, select Messages for Web.
Well, we could
and I don't have
messages,
that yet. Okay.
Oh, I did have it. I thought. Maybe not. Okay. Yeah, so you have to be updated, and that's that all goes down to whether Google feels you're worthy.
I am not worthy, but I knew that. Cause
clearly
Google,
not worthy.
Google stuff, I love it, but it does not love me. Mm-hmm. It does not.
Okay, well, if this is all true, then all you need to do, Google, is make an iOS version, and I will be happy. Then I will be happy.
I like their tip on this. To save your mobile data, stay connected to Wi-Fi.
I searched Google Messenger for iOS. First response, Google Allo.
They can't figure it out. They do offer Allo on iOS and Hangouts. I don't understand. What version of Messages, again, do we have to have?
Don't know, boss.
What's this?
So you click and go into the help, and you click the login to messages for web, and that's what I get. That's where it takes me to.
No, you go to messages.google.com.
But that's in the help file. You click on this, and this is where it takes you.
He's going, so that's not even a Google page. That's some weird page.
But that's from the
don't, help whatever you do, don't click on that. Don't do it, Burke. Don't you do it. I don't know. I don't know if I care even. You can no longer book Uber rides in Google Maps. What do you think that's all about? Why did they take that? They just announced that that was going to be in
there. Yeah, I don't get it. And there's no explanation unless they're planning to buy Lyft or something. I don't know.
Oh.
Maybe they're against, either planning to buy Lyft or they're against bad self-driving cars.
Maybe they're going to make Waymo the link. You know, Waymo, isn't it Waymo just bought 20,000 Jaguar E-Paces? 20,000?
Jeez.
That sounds like a pretty big rollout.
And those are nice cars.
Those are nice cars. You can't even get it yet in the U.S. We're going to get one review. Well, they're advertising it, but I think it's soon to be in the U.S.
They're introducing the Waymo Jaguar self-driving I-Pace.
Yeah. Oh, and I-Pace, not E-Pace. I-Pace. Okay.
They're going to use them. They ordered up to $20,000 or 20,000 of them. Jeez. This was announced back in March, though.
So that's for, quote, public testing, but that's really public. So maybe that's the plan, right? By the end of 2018, maybe they took it out or Uber out because they're going to put Waymo in. Waymo better. Let's see here.
Oh, wait, this says they're adding 62,000 FCA minivans to their fleet, too.
Yeah, they're growing this thing.
Yeah,
this sounds like they're getting ready to go into a city with a fleet. Yeah. They're going for a fleet.
Yeah.
It's a big fleet. How many cars do you need?
If you call and it pulls up and there's nobody in the car, you'd probably feel better, right?
I would hop in, no questions asked, quite literally, because there'd be no one to ask.
Yeah.
So I'd do it. And I'd videotape the whole thing. I'd be like, hey, guys. Oh,
yeah. And you wouldn't be nervous?
No, why would I be nervous?
Because it might crash.
Okay, no.
So does the bozo driving my...
Actually, you're right. It's much worse. Yeah, you're right.
I would be more worried about it going slowly and never getting to my destination, quite honestly. I'd be like, dear God, go faster.
Right. And you can't say faster.
You can. It just won't listen.
I got $100 for you if you could get there in 5 minutes. Nothing.
So,
what? The best part for me?
Yeah.
I don't have to have a conversation with a stranger.
I know.
So, Jeff, I'm surprised at that. That is like journalism 101.
That's when I have a purpose. I know no one is going to believe this, but I am shy.
I am shy and I'm an introverted, but I make it myself. Om actually taught me this and it's good. Talk to somebody anytime I can talk to someone who I don't normally talk to.
Talk to them.
I do.
And then what do you learn? And
all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, sometimes you just make a connection with another person. Sometimes you're like, my God, why did I start this conversation? But sometimes you learn really interesting things. I mean, about the city you're visiting. Maybe it's about a problem. Like I always ask people about, like, lately it's been like, oh, how do you feel about Uber in Austin? Right. You know, which do you carry?
We do ask that, yeah. It's George Burns said it. Remember that? George Burns. He said, it's a shame that the only people who know how to run the country are driving cabs and cutting hair.
So I know you're shy, Jeff, but you know what? I challenge you to do that. Because
I agree with you, but
he tells his students to
I'll do it in all kinds of places. I'll talk to flight attendants. I'll talk to people. But sometimes I want to be the one to choose. And sometimes you get in a car and so one of my phobias in life when I was a child was the haircut. Because the barber was going to say,
talk.
How about them Cubs?
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything about the Cubs because I wasn't a real man.
I did a podcast on whether it was acceptable to wear earbuds while you're getting your hair cut.
No, it is the height of rudeness. All you have to do is say, I'm not feeling very social today.
Would you call into that podcast so I can add your voice?
That's more awkward by far.
No, it is not more awkward. People appreciate that. I'm not kidding. I am an introverted person.
They're afraid of talking to you then.
No, just, and you say it nicely. You're like, they'll be like, oh, so it's super hot lately. And you're like, yeah, you know, I'm not feeling super social today. You know, do you mind if I just look at my phone or if I just sit here?
Well, if you just wear earbuds, you don't even have to have that conversation.
But that is like, that is negating them as being worthwhile to you as a person. That is the most dismissive thing you could do.
Their worth to me is cutting my hair.
That is insulting. Well, I asked have a robot.
I asked Candace, who, by the way, I do talk to every time because she gives me great tips on how to get my wife to like me. And she said it's okay with her. She said, I do not mind when people wear earbuds.
Okay, yes. You can ask someone. But, like, I even hate when people, like, go through the checkout line at things talking on their cell phone. I think that is like, a failure to acknowledge the person who is in front of you at this moment. I think it's the height of rudeness. And I hate people.
That's what... So I asked this on my Leo on the Line podcast, LOTL, which turns out it stands for Lesbians on the Loose. I didn't know that. I did not realize that. And I got a lot of feedback because it's a call-in show. That's Leo on the Line. See, it's Leo on the Line. And or whatever. And guy called up and said, "Well, in my community, I'm African American. In my community, the barbershop is where you find out everything that's going on in the community."
Right. Yeah.
So you know, we wouldn't want to wear headphones.
I don't know. I think people. Yeah, you know what I think. I've said it.
I want you to know what you think about this: a new phone from Oppo. This is OPPO. They are a Chinese company. They actually were kind of the spinoff as OnePlus, but Oppo still makes phones. In fact, they're one of the biggest sellers in China. They're making a phone. So the new metric, you should know this, for smartphones is what percentage of the front face is screen. Up to now, 91% has been the highest anybody can get. This one is 93%. Because, look at this, the camera pops up. There's no notch. The camera pops up front and back.
Does it turn on instantly?
Yeah.
There's no delay? That'd be nice.
They say, well, I can show it to you. This is a Verge video. I ordered one.
Of course you did.
They say that it's so fast, because there's no fingerprint reader, you have to do face recognition, that it does the face recognition in half a second. See, that's how fast the camera launched. Did you see that? It was pretty quick. This is the Oppo.
What do you hit to get the camera to launch? You have to go to the screen to do that? Is there no button?
You swipe up.
Oh,
or there's a camera button. Oppo's new Find X was announced in Paris yesterday. It combines, it's a 6.4-inch display in a regular size, phone because it's 93.8% screen. And that it can do the face recognition. By the way, 25-megapixel front-facing camera with 3D scanning system, 16-megapixel and 20-megapixel dual rear camera. The other thing is no camera bump because it slides right into it. There's
no stupid notch.
No notch.
No stupid notch.
The cameras can open in just half a second. So you swipe up, it recognizes you, and then it goes away. And here for privacy nuts is another nice feature. The camera's covered when it's not in use. Interesting, okay? Look at that.
It's tough. It is tough, though. Oh, that's a good point. Someone said it was tough to put a case on that, which...
Yeah,
case makers are just dedicated case person.
Yeah. Maybe not good for a case.
And mechanical parts.
Right. You're bringing up all the potential problems.
But, I love things that click. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I love things that pop up at
it. Yeah, you don't slide it up, too. It's a little motor.
Oh.
Ooh, that's another sign of... Another thing that could go wrong.
Yeah, it sure is.
I just like seeing innovation in this space because everybody else slavishly copies Apple.
Yeah.
So it's nice.
Although I think that screen percentage, that's like kind of a silly metric. I do not want to live in a world where now I'm going to have to suddenly memorize like percentage of your face that is screen. I'm like, oh, really?
Ask your barber. He'll know.
Ask them what?
The iPhone is 80 2.9% screen. I'm telling you, it's going to be the new metric.
Let's not make this happen.
Yes, it's going to be the new metric. Too late. It's already happened. You wrote about this, Stacey Higginbotham.
Me?
Amazon is putting Echoes in hotel rooms. There are already hotels doing this, but this is a specially designed Echo for hotels. I think this might be really great.
You can, I think this is really awesome.
Ask it for room service, request housekeeping, play music, of course. It's called A Word for Hospitality. And it will be distributed on an invitation basis to hotels, vacation rental spots, and other locations. The Marriott Hotels, Westin Hotels, St. Regis, Loft, and Autograph Collection Hotels starting this summer. There have been hotels like the Wynn Las Vegas who've had this before, but they weren't just the regular everyday Echo. You can ask
they were the regular everyday Echoes, but there was actually a lot happening on the back end to make them work in the hotel rooms.
Yeah, because that's just to be for a new person every time somebody checks in and checks out.
Well, no, the Wynn does it a little bit differently.
Oh,
but
okay.
For this one, it's kind of like creating a blueprint for the hotel, but there's a bunch of parameters.
You can order room service. I mean, I love it. Yes. You could say, Echo, can you get me a ham and cheese on rye and a bottle of pop? And or because I say that all the time.
Pop. It'll come back and say, you apparently are over 70 years old. Bottle of pop.
You can say, what time does the hotel pool close? Where the fitness center is?
You know what's going to happen? It's like going to a new hotel room, which I do often. And you okay, what channel is MSNBC? And they don't give you the list anymore.
Love to have
so you got to go through everything, right?
Love to have
and
that.
So, What'll happen now is that Aunt Bessie will go in the room and you've taught her how to use it, but she won't know what the commands are. You'll end up with this huge catalog of commands. You might as well pick up the phone.
Oh.
Well, wait. So I don't know if you guys have done this, but if you go into Amazon today, you can create a blueprint and one of the blueprints for house guests. So this is
Neat.
So go to Amazon, I think it's .com/blueprints or something. So I've actually done this in our house and you basically, and yes, you do have to ask Madam A the questions or have the right syntax, but you actually put in a lot of syntax when you're, get your mind out of the gutter, man. When I did it, I was like, how do I turn on the lights? How do I change the temperature? I tried how do I change the thermostat? Like all of these variations of things that my guest, I figured, would want to know. And this is very similar. So you'll probably have a list of a couple commands like but you already have that in hotels today. You have those fat books, right? That you get and you're like, okay.
Just looked up Yeef. sorry. The new Alexa for Hospitality will link to your Amazon account if you want. You'll be able to go in your Echo settings, say, I'm going to be staying at that hotel, just here's my music. Here's all of that stuff. So it would know. I could say read to me, and it would know my Audible book and would read to me. I think this is going to be awesome.
But that's not there yet. And there's a couple things we should note. One, I think it's at the end of every day, possibly every stay.
It'll reset.
They're going to reset. So you don't have your old commands. They go away. The hotels don't get the data. They don't get the voice data. Good. Amazon's very particular about that.
Of course.
They will get metrics like, how many percentage of people who accessed room service through this device, example.
I don't have to talk to people.
There you go. Mm-hmm. And tying it to your personal account, they're not offering that yet. Marriott was the first company to actually tie your Netflix account in your hotel room. And that integration actually took so long. I talked to Marriott when they did it. And the amount of time and effort for authenticating and the de-authenticating was incredible. So if anyone's going to be able to do this well, it's going to be Marriott, but it is a time consuming thing.
Marriott's now gigantic because it also includes Starwood.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the merger, the purchase.
Sigh.
I'm a Marriott person, so I'm fine. We're now together in one big happy family.
Yeah,
I don't like
staying at Marriott's. I don't like that.
I didn't either. And okay.
We know why.
So anyway,
why. You don't need to tell us.
What else?
What else?
So we want to make fun of Pixelbook getting Windows?
No, it's good news.
Why is it good news?
You get your choice. Jeff,
you're being censored right now.
You get your choice.
Well, if you get any information from Nigeria.
Listen, no, listen, don't stop it. This is good. This guy gave $110,000 to a Nigerian prince.
Boy, if you get any information from Nigeria, ignore it.
Yeah, lesson learned.
Yeah. Friend. He took part in the Nigerian prince scam for several years, remortgaged his house three times. Wired the guy
$2,500 at one whack.
Wired him $110,000 over time. He thought he was going to get $64 million from the Nigerian government. At one point, he was asked to travel to the airport in Wichita to meet a man with two chests of cash.
And I started looking for him.
And guess what, Fred?
Never showed up.
What?
And I started
asking
around.
Okay, guys, we cannot mock this man.
Where's my cash?
It's sad, but we all know people who, for whatever reason, are down on their luck or just they want to believe in this.
Did you ever know the Niagara Falls grandparent scam? Did you ever hear that one?
Wait a minute. Let me finish this, though, because there's a happy ending to Fred's story.
No, there is. There is.
He got his money back. In a settlement with the Department of Justice, Western Union admitted it knew that some of its employees had conspired with scam artists. They set aside $586 million, a fund to refund victims across the U.S. and Canada, and they were able to get Fred's $110,000 back.
Most people don't know about this fund. So if you do know anybody, if you do have an uncle or an aunt who did this, for God's sakes, let them know.
Yeah. He had saved every receipt and every email. He sent the numbers to the Attorney General's office. Each was confirmed. He was granted a $65,000 refund. Then he found another box of receipts, got the rest. So 344 victims have claimed a total of $1.7 million in refunds.
There's a lot left in that fund.
There's still a lot left. It all started for Fred with his email, Yahoo email box in 2005. He actually thought he got got to the point, he said, where they were showing me that the president of Nigeria had sent me a letter. It had his picture on it and everything. I looked it up on the computer to see what the Nigerian president looked like, and it was him. He got an email from Robert Mueller, FBI director Robert Mueller, supposedly. His code name was B-Dog. It was signed with the FBI's official seal and address. And Mueller told him, "I wish you can remove doubt and suspicious and go ahead. I assured you that you will never regret this fund release." Because Mueller's famous for his fractured syntax. Boy, if you get any information from Nigeria, ignore it. Yeah, this has been a problem for a long time, even before 2005. There was like the 440 scam or something. Because it's a well-known scam even before the internet. This was so that was the Kansas City Star story. Really, actually, a great story about him getting his money back. Now you can go ahead. I just wanted to finish that up.
It breaks your heart that he mortgaged his house three times. It just breaks your heart.
Oh, the poor guy.
I look at him and I see so many people.
Our relatives.
Not just relatives, but anybody who's just, life sucks for them and they're hopeful. It's easy to, I don't know.
It's not even desperation necessarily. It's just gullibility to.
It's greed.
That's true, too. Yes, that's true, too. Yes.
The con man will say, "I don't take advantage of anybody. I take advantage of their greed."
Yeah,
so
but
the
I
Niagara
don't think it's
Falls
greed.
One,
yeah.
The grandparent one is, and my father got hit with this, but he didn't. My mother, and we stopped him. But he was just so nervous that hi, Grandpa, and don't even call him Grandpa. Call him something different. But he believed that Jake was in trouble somewhere.
Oh.
And it's a random call. You're calling somebody in Florida. Chances are it's a grandparent. Yeah. Chances are they have a grandchild. Okay, let's make it bet it's a son. And then grandson. And then, boom, there it goes. And all these, no clues gotten, right? He doesn't call you grandpa. Never said his name. You know, da-da-da-da-da. But he was ready to go to Walmart and wire some money because he thought it was not greed. He thought he was helping his grandson.
Yeah, that's common. There's a lot of people who prey on people like, I lost my phone overseas, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
Send me money, that send one. Me this. Yeah,
that one. I just right. barely stopped my ex-wife from doing that because she got an email. It was very credible from our gardener who said, I'm in Europe. I lost my wallet. I hate to do this, but I can't get home. If you could just wire me some money so I can get home, I'll, of course, pay you back. And it was signed by our gardener. And what had happened is somebody had broken into his Yahoo account,
right?
Read all his mail, got his name, got his business and all that, then sent emails to all the people in his address book. And
although I got one not that long ago that was like, I know that this is part of a scam, but this is really not a scam. You know, it was like,
well,
it was very convincing. It sounded a lot like my friend. So yeah. then I had to go and I was like,
that's what makes it
credible. Are they even there?
Yeah.
But a quick Facebook check showed me that they were not there.
Yeah. The, I mean, what I really feel for is all those Nigerian princes who actually are trying to get money out of the country. Because it's very hard to convince anybody. No, that's they're not. There's nobody. There is nobody. That's not real. That's not real. Crypto Kitties. Here's some Schadenfreude.
Wait, is this a scam?
No, I wouldn't say it's a scam. I think they're very straightforward. Crypto Kitties, which was I kind of regret not playing it now. It was a virtual kitty. You would buy kitties. They could breed and create new, unique kitties, which you could then sell. And, of course, speculators jumped on it. It was based on blockchain. Must be good. It was one of the world's first blockchain games. And they raised some money. Andreessen Horowitz and Union Square Ventures in March gave them $12 million for digital collectibles. Unfortunately, it was a little bubbly. The number of CryptoKitties transactions decreased in June by 98%.
Jeez.
And it's now gone down to virtually zero, although Mr. CryptoKitty says you can't measure it by the number of transactions that happen in a month. People are holding their CryptoKitties, and the price has gone down. The average price is about $5 per digital cat. All-time medium high, $41, but we heard about people selling cats for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Which reminds me. I've had conversations about this lately. Can one of you geniuses explain ICOs to me and tokens?
Sure.
And do it.
Stacy could do that really well.
That was mean. I can explain what the blockchain is. I cannot explain token sales.
All right,
sales
you do the blockchain, I'll do tokens.
Blockchain, I guess.
I'll tell you, one of the reasons I can answer this is yesterday I read the most pointless article I've ever read in Wired Magazine. It must have been 50,000 words about an ICO scam that never ended. But I read the whole dang thing.
To understand the ICO and the token and the fiat currency.
Yes.
Okay, so that's your assignment.
Professor. I can. You want me to do this, Stacey? You can.
ICOs to him.
We can do it together if you want. I'll start with fiat currency, then you can do blockchain.
Oh, I could take fiat.
We'll do fiat then. It has to start with fiat.
So currency based on like an actual
belief
thing of value.
No.
I start with, we used to be on the gold standard, and then eventually we moved to fiat.
Think about gold, though. The value of gold does not equal its actual value. The industrial value of gold is far lower than the price it sells for.
Oh, even okay. Gold you're going to go there. Okay.
Yeah, no, even gold's a fiat currency.
Oh, wow.
It's a fiat currency, right?
Yeah, okay.
Because, so currency is a store of value, right? It's like a battery for value. I mow your lawn. There's two things you could do. You could give me a loaf of bread, then we've done barter.
We can
barter.
Get a gif of the president yelling at you.
Or you could give me a token of some kind that says, this is the value of that lawn mowing. We've pre-agreed that you will give me $5. That's a piece of paper that says $5, has Abraham Lincoln on it, and that we've agreed. That's roughly equivalent to the amount of energy I put into mowing. And the only thing that's holding that up is faith, fiat. Because the full faith and credit of the United States government.
So fiat currency is otherwise known as a liquid currency that people agree on.
It's agreed upon value. It has no inherent value. And Stacey, you're right. Initially, it was pegged to gold, but gold doesn't have that value either because of the industrial value of the metal, the base metal is nowhere near what the value was assigned. So even that was, to some degree, it was a tangible thing. It's like clamshells or cowrie shells, right?
Right. Okay, step
so,
on.
So that's what that's and then there's some backed by government, some not. There's Bill's dollars. Bill, the deli owner, wants to buy a new deli, can't get a bank loan, so he puts out Bill's dollars that worth 80% of the value of a sandwich. You give me 80 cents on the dollar for a sandwich, I'll give you a sandwich, 20% discount. And you buy it, and now I have cash to buy a new deli. And people, it's actually happened. People actually trade it. There's Canadian Tire. It was a store in Canada. People were using their Canadian Tire currency as real currency. Because as long as you all agree, this is some value. That's a fiat currency.
S&H green stamps.
Green stamps, perfect example.
Yeah.
Okay,
keep going. Keep going, professors.
Now we get to blockchain.
Oh, okay. Blockchain is a distributed ledger system. So it's just a way to track something in computing. And the way you track it and the way it works is you have to get a consensus to agree that this transaction has taken place and stored. And what happens, the consensus is usually 51%. I think it could be other things, I don't know. And to do in cryptocurrencies, to create these things, to create bitcoins, et cetera, you have something called proof of work, and that is computing power. You don't actually, that's not tied to blockchain. Blockchain is just the distributed ledger aspect of it. That was kind of really confusing.
Right, that's where you're going into Bitcoin now.
You need some way, when we have financial transactions, you need some way of recording financial transactions, a ledger. Generally, in the past, this has all been done in a centralized place, a bank. If if you come to me and you buy something, I put it in my book, and now we have a record of it, but it's centralized. So blockchain was created by Satoshi Nakamoto, a mysterious person or persons, initially with Bitcoin, the idea that you could create something that would be fully decentralized, a ledger that is fully decentralized but contains an agreed upon truth. So you don't have to have a central person, a bank or somebody keeping that ledger. By the way, ledger could be a database, could be anything really, but it's all agreed upon. And yeah, the proof of work is, there's a lot of complicated math about why you do a proof of work and so forth. But it could be, but so let's say it's done for a currency. Like Bitcoin. So the ledger keeps track of who has what. If I buy something from you using Bitcoin, it's entered into the ledger. The Bitcoin miners not only create new coins, and there's going to be a limit of 21 million Bitcoin, but to avoid inflation. He's tried to figure out how to avoid a lot of the problems that all fiat currencies suffer. But among other things, the miners not only create coins, but they also, using their machines, doing all this mathematics, do the ledger, maintain the ledger. And one of the problems...
And the crypto part of it, the security part of it as well.
Yeah, because right? They're doing is factoring primes. So they're doing math, hard math. And the math gets harder, by the way. This is another good thing, or an interesting thing that Nakamoto did. He's made the math harder over time. So, because you want to... I'm not sure.
That's only for blockchain, though. That's only for Bitcoin.
Yeah,
sorry,
there's only other ways of doing this. Yeah, there's other ways of doing this. So this is how Bitcoin.
Right now, I'm so far so good. I'm fine. Now ICO and tokens.
So along comes an alternative to Bitcoin called Ethereum. Similar blockchain, similar idea, tries to solve some of the problems. You know, Bitcoin. Well, among other things, the problems with Bitcoin are, besides its huge volatility, which is a big problem, this transaction times have slowed a lot, and the cost of transactions have gone up a lot. So people are trying to create new kinds of Bitcoin. And Bitcoin really is funny because you can't change Bitcoin. You can only fork it, and you can't say let's fix Bitcoin. It's been historically a problem with Bitcoin, and so there's some real problems built into it. And you can only could fork it, create a different kind of Bitcoin. So Ethereum was a different way of doing it that tried to solve it. The SEC has decided, by the way, that ICOs are in fact real financial transactions. The idea is just like a stock offer. It's just like those Frank's dollars, the deli dollars. I've decided that I want to raise money for my business. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to issue a ICO, an initial coin offering. and you will give me fiat, government-backed fiat currency, and I will give you this token that has some value. In the case of Frank's Deli, it's 80% of a sandwich, or it's a sandwich at a 20% discount, rather. So it's a way of raising money. Sometimes it's used, so companies like Telegram have raised, I think, almost $1 billion now with their Bitcoin, because they're going to, they say that our Bitcoin, our currency is going to be used, our ICO, but is for a currency that we're going to use, we're going to create a currency. You will have, those tokens will be translated into that currency for monetary exchange inside of Telegram, right? So the idea is it's basically a way of raising money. And there was some question for a while.
And then how is ongoing value created? Why are you buying that
token? Other people think your token is...
It's a speculative market.
Well, it doesn't have to be speculative. If your token actually can be exchanged for goods and services that people want, then you're on your way to establishing a true fiat currency based on it. So inside Telegram, if people really think it's
real money,
worthwhile,
right.
then right. yeah. Then you can get things. The problem with the token in most cases is it's a closed ecosystem. So you have to want things within that closed ecosystem. But for the rest of the world, you want to be able to take something out and get dollars because that's how the
and
rest of the world
convert to
works.
Fiat.
Right. Well, and there's
right.
another
well,
problem.
Well, no, it converts
or to
dollars.
Or to goods
which
or
is
services.
What?
There's another
yeah.
problem with tokens, which is in many cases, the people who issue the tokens take the cash, take the real money and disappear.
Right.
And you're left yeah. holding nothing. Because if the ICO, you know, right. if those tokens are never turned into anything of value. So last year, there were $6.5 billion worth of ICOs, hundreds of millions of dollars sometimes in just a few hours raised. You know, the SEC has kind of dithered around about whether these are securities, but eventually decided they were securities. So there may be going forward some regulation on this. But there's been people have put money into these things and just the people disappeared.
So there's a much vaunted, a lot of people who are really, really good involved in this called Civil, which is a journalism platform.
Yeah.
I'd met one of the founders.
They're wonderful
She's
people.
She's so great.
I've read the white paper three times. And what I lose, so people, they're going to raise a lot of money, they say, through an ICO. So people mm-hmm. are going to give money into their closed ecosystem. My money is sitting there now exchanged for these tokens, right? The presumption
those
has
tokens
to be that
are going to let you buy credibility on certain journalists. I'm not kidding.
So right, but how the hell does
well,
that
it doesn't
work?
Monetize? So a lot of right. so in a lot of cases you're thinking an ICO you
and
should think
donations.
Of it as a donation. And in fact, for a while a lot of the people in the ICO community said, "Yeah, if we call this a donation, we're off the hook." The SEC said, no, that's not true. But that was their attempt to get around it, is by saying, no, you're not buying anything. It's a donation.
So I get a token and I give it to Leo because we can do investigative journalism. No, you're not going to do it. I'll give it to Stacy. So I give it to Stacy. I give you a token that had been worth $100. There's a market. It could be worth $110 now or $90 now or whatever. And you agree that you're going to do this wonderful story because I've given you this money. And done good for the world. I've done good for the world because Stacy does the story, the world gets it. But how was any additional value created such that there's an influx of real money into this beyond some measure of charity to start off with?
Well, it just depends how people structure it, you know.
Yeah, that's the key thing when you're evaluating an ICO. You have to decide if they're going to be able to get real money into their system or build a system where there's value, where your token has value to you for whatever good and service they're going to exchange for it. So there are like electricity ICOs that have happened where your token gets you electricity, which then you can say, oh, well, that's worthwhile because otherwise I would spend actual money on that. So great for electricity. For digital services, it's a little less clear. For things like journalism, I mean, they're eventually asking you to pay for journalism like with real money. So
getting back to the old confidence games, there's a confidence game called an exit scam that is being played out now in ICOs where companies raise funds and disappear. And there's $9 million.
To be clear, I'm not suggesting that's happening in the case of Civil at all.
No. According to Investopedia, $9 million is lost each day in cryptocurrency scams. It's very easy to fall into these. Bitcoin.com News said $1.36 billion worth of cryptocurrencies were stolen by fraudulent ICOs in the first 2 months of 2018.
All this comes back to Fred and the new Norwegian crypto princes. Norwegian. I say Norwegian. I meant Nigerian.
Well, it is. It's a scam just like the Nigerian.
It's a scam. Potentially.
It is a potential scam. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Did we really do all of that just so you could say that sentence, Jeff?
One of the reasons it's a great scam.
I was trying to understand civil.
One of the reasons it's a great scam is because blockchain is basically anonymous. So it's not only is it decentralized, so there's nobody regulating, it's anonymous. So, you know, you can get away with this.
It's anonymous but trackable, isn't it?
It is trackable.
I remember talking to agents at a conference. It was a digital currency conference, and these people were at the FBI, and they were like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to us. I was like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, okay, it's anonymous, but if there's leaks in the system or it's not well-designed, it's not fully anonymous. You get a number. Each transaction, each party to the transaction has a basically anonymous number. If it can't be tied back to you in some other way, then it's anonymous. But cash is anonymous, too. I mean, it's not – cash is totally anonymous, but there's plenty of cash tracking done. Wozniak, last February, the one of the founders of Apple, said he lost 7 bitcoins through fraud using a stolen credit card.
You just lost them through bad memory.
I lost them because I couldn't – same amount, by the way, because I can't remember the password. No, they're not lost. The cover story in July's Wired is all about this, and it's very long, but it's an interesting read. There's maybe more personal details than I really needed, but inside the crypto world's biggest scandal, and it's all about an ICO gone terribly, terribly wrong, but with the best intentions. This wasn't a case of a con so much as just, you know, good intentions gone wrong.
Thank you very much. So now that I've had you explain that, so last week you solved my problem of the peeing cat. I got
the camera. Oh, how did that work?
Well, it did because the cat peed on the camera. Turned off the motion detection, and so it freaked the cat out and it ran away, and then the cat batted it down.
Okay, you go into the settings.
Yeah.
And hold on. Really? Is this happening? See,
it is in the
sense. We're going to rename the show.
It is.
Explain it to Jeff.
Yeah. That's all right. Windows Weekly is explained to Leo, so it all works out.
All right.
BitTorrent got sold. I'm sad. BitTorrent got sold for $140 million.
I hope that Bram got a lot of money out of that.
I'm sure he did. Bram, I always want to say Bram Stoker. Bram Cohen.
Yeah, I know.
Who founded Bitcoin.
BitTorrent.
BitTorrent sold it to a blockchain startup. Of all people.
For cash.
$140 million.
For
cash. Yeah. For fiat currency. Government backed.
So. Yeah, I was about to say, you should stress that it is backed by the U.S. government because that's what makes our currency so exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeff, you go in, you look at the devices, the actual live stream, and then there's a little hamburger menu that says more. Click on that.
Right.
And then there's a motion tracking thing and just click it off. And it should turn it off. Yeah.
And now...
If it's lit up, is it on? And if it's dark, it's off?
I think so. I just pressed yes to an update, so now it's showing me the update progress bar.
And now we're going to wrap this thing up because we've gone on way too long.
And so Leo wanted to be done with us sooner tonight.
Yes.
Leo's bored with us.
No, we're good.
Leo wanted
out.
We're
still within 3 hours.
Oh, yeah. We're still well under 3 hours. In fact, you want to go on a little longer?
No, I'm just now getting hungry.
What are you going to have for dinner?
And thirsty. Pardon?
What's dinner tonight?
Oh, it's a terrible dinner. It's the kale and quinoa salad. I don't like it, but my daughter does.
Oh, you know what I made?
The fact that your daughter loves that is just freaky.
She would like my chicken tikka masala with handmade naan bread.
I would like that.
Basmati rice, although I'm thinking of doing cauliflower rice the next time.
Oh, you're so trendy.
I know. I'm with it. I'm hip. It was delicious. That's what I'm having for dinner tonight because I'm having leftovers. Microsoft News, just what we needed on Android, a new way to stay informed.
There is an Android version.
Yes, iOS, Android. It's always been Windows.
For Microsoft News?
Yeah, what? Never been a huge fan. It's the old MSN.
Oh.
Yeah, I've got a friend who works there.
I've never been a huge fan.
They apparently got... You know, a lot of traffic.
They have a lot of journalists too. I mean, it's a big newsroom. Look,
they do. They do know what's. They pay. And they actually pay.
Yeah.
Media companies for stuff.
Yeah.
So I looked up what Microsoft News in the Play Store.
Yeah. Now on Android. But that's not my pick of the week. Let's get Stacy's, and I'll give you my pick of the week.
Well,
oh, we're already there.
We're already picking of the week. I have two picks because I haven't tried either of them, but I feel like it's important to show people things.
Okay.
I don't know if there's value in that, but
there
I feel
is.
Like...
No, it's what's like what's out there. What's going on? What are the kids doing?
In like next week or the week afterwards, I'll follow up with you. But here is what I'm doing. This is my husband's Father's Day present because our iTwinkle lights broke.
It's Sylvania. What is it?
Connected Garden Spotlights.
Oh, I like that.
So these are the mini RGB lights. They are Zigbee, sorry. So they need a hub. I happen to have a hub. These were about $60 on Amazon. And if you need a hub, I can't remember how much the hub is because I didn't need it. But I wanted to show you because they're a lot smaller than I thought they were. Ah! Sorry. So here are the little lighting stakes that you're going to shove into the ground. Doo-doo. Each one. And you can attach three of these strands together. There's 9 lights on each strand.
Are they solar or powered?
No, they're powered. They're electric powered.
Nice.
So you get this cool high PV 65 rated outlet thing that the outlet's in the other box and a cord that attaches, and you can turn them colors. There is no true white on these because it's an RGB LED. So, you know. That's the thing to know about them, but I'm really excited about them. And he is too, because he likes colored lights.
So it's like Hue for your garden.
It's Hue for your garden. Now Hue did just actually put out outdoor lights.
Oh.
They're launched them. They're not going to be shipping till mid-July. And those are not these though. These are designed to go like along a pathway. The Hue lights are two spots and two sconces, I believe.
Nice.
Stacey, so, I got to say, I feel for your husband.
Oh, man.
Because, you know, here, honey, I got you something for Father's Day. It's an IoT fan. That'd be like me giving my wife an ICO token for journalists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Honey, you're going to be rich. I got something for you. $1.20 in Canadian dollar money, Canadian tire money.
Okay, tire money.
Look at that. Yeah. There's some real fiat currency. There you go.
Is that Tyre McGregor there?
He's a nice Scotsman. That means it's worth something.
Canadian Tire is a great store because it's not just tires.
Far from it.
Far from it. It's got everything.
Yeah.
And tires.
Stacey, you said you had two things.
Well, I'm going to ask you. So I have a second thing that is not as picturesque, but I haven't even opened it yet. So I'm very curious what it looks like. This is the Delta sink attachment that's going to make my sink, which is a capacitive touch Delta faucet in my kitchen, it's going to make it talk to Madam A. Hey, do not knock the capacitive touch faucet.
Honey, how do you turn on the faucet in the kitchen?
You just tap it, sweetheart.
Just close the blinds, honey. The faucet will come on.
Next, you're going to talk to it. Then you're just going to think you want water.
Delta,
that's going to happen.
And Amazon Echo speaking the same language.
Oh, no.
I don't want to talk to my faucet.
No, you do. No. My husband wanted this.
Oh, yeah. You know why?
Oh, yeah.
You know why? Because your hands are dirty.
Again.
Your hands are dirty. You've been digging in the garden to put those stupid those great Sylvania lights in. And your hands are filthy and you don't want to go hit the knob.
I think we got to bring your husband up here and verify.
I've met Andrew. He is a saint.
He must be.
He's also
an
very lucky.
Of the
He's
show
a lucky man
year.
And a saint.
He is indeed.
Yeah.
But he wanted this because you can tell it to dispense 2 cups of water, for example.
Oh. Is it accurate? We don't know yet.
It's accurate. Well, that's
what
we're going
to
test.
Can you tell it to dispense 2 cups of water at 120 degrees?
You cannot give it, you can only say warmer or cooler. But you can also set programming so I can fill my spaghetti pot to my preferred spaghetti pot.
Oh, that's great. Thing.
And I can say, hey.
Oh, you too. Oh, you too.
I'm sold.
See?
So it has some sort of flow. It is like a flow cable meter.
It has a, yes, it does.
Wow.
So this is just got it. This is it. Now the challenging is.
You need to have a plug faucet next to your plug.
You do. You need to have a plug outlet underneath your sink. I happen to have one because I have a garbage disposable.
Oh, yeah, of course. Most people do, probably. That's right. That's right. So, yeah, you're going to have one under your sink.
Yeah, so I can say, Madam A, ask Delta to turn on, ask Delta to turn off. Branding. Ask it to dispense one cup. Ask it to warm up water. Ask it to fill bottle. Feeling creative? Program your own custom commands. Ta-da!
That's really cool. Because you have like a 16-quart spaghetti pot or something, and you just want it to fill up. Yeah.
And this is me with all my pieces and parts. So I'm going to install this.
Are you? You're not going to call a plumber?
No, you don't need a plumber. I've installed faucets before, too. So I'm not real worried. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, are you ordering one?
No.
Good.
I'll tell. So next week, I will be able to tell you guys. I'll do a follow-up on these items.
I might after her review next week, though. Yeah.
So there you go. Yep.
Jeff, you have a number for us?
I do indeed. So slightly political, but when the stuff down Stacy Way was occurring on the border, a couple named Charlotte and Dave Wilner in San Francisco saw a picture of a two-year-old, reminded them of their own two-year-old daughter, and they started a fundraiser on Facebook, hoping to raise $1,500. 5 days later, it's now at, what does it say there?
13.4
million. When I put this link up this afternoon about 2:30, and it's now 6:30, so, you know, a few hours ago, it was just 10 million. So in the time of the show, plus a little bit, it's raised $2, $3 million. And it's for the...
reunite parents and children.
Well, it's to bond out people and to represent them in court. It's the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services in Texas. I saw they did a Facebook Live show answering all the questions about how they operate and what they do. Mark Zuckerberg has given, other people have given, but it's pretty amazing. You can see, you know, when you want to yell about Facebook, when you want to say Facebook's awful, people can join together and they can do things that matter.
Which, I saw this on Twitter.
Well, okay. Jesus.
But it pointed to a Facebook thing, right?
Pointed to a Facebook thing, Stacy.
Now, I want to point out, it says he's raised $13.4 million of $15 million. They kept increasing.
Moving it up. Yes.
Because once you hit the goal, then it stops. So they keep increasing the goal. So, I mean, the sky's the limit on this.
This could keep going. And so, by the way, just to note, this is a good thing that happens on Facebook. That, unlike my European friends, it's not a scam on people's lives. That people do real good things, which is why, by the way, as the headline says, scream about Facebook all you want, but the stock is at an all-time high.
Boy, so, this has to be more money than Races has ever received.
Oh, it is by far.
By far.
But for things like bond funds, the number of cases being brought, the Justice Department, like 20% of the Justice Department cases are immigration cases. And the number, I can't remember, but it was like, you know, tens of thousands of cases last year. It's going to be more than 300,000 cases so far. So the number of cases that will require bond and legal help and so on, this money will, I'm sure, be used.
Okay.
Okay. Hopefully, so for its intended purposes.
Yeah, I think it's funny because I saw that you donated and I had my finger on the button and I went, well, I probably should learn.
I know,
wait
a minute. I know.
I should read up on this.
I read up. The Washington Post did a feature on it. I read up other news on it. So I did the right thing.
Okay.
Through Races, the Races served 7,000 family members in detention last year.
It is a legit charity. I can actually tell you that because I am familiar with it. I have a friend who volunteers for it as a lawyer. So it is a legit organization.
I let it go for a day, Leo.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's nice actually to have something you can do because I feel like a lot of what we do is holler. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I'll change my picture on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of charity, one last number. What the heck? So both Square and Twitter are about to double their stock value, making the combined companies worth more than Tesla. So they laughed when Jack sat down.
Wow.
Square and on the brink of boasting 100% gains this year, the firms are now worth more than $62 billion combined, says Bloomberg, surpassing the market value of Tesla. They laughed at Jack. Laugh no more.
Wow. Very nice. My mine is a little more self-serving. There's an Android podcast app in town. And actually, you know, it's early days yet, and goodness knows there's a lot of podcast apps. We recommend podcasts among others. But if you use, this is basically, I think, a window into Google Podcasts. But if you, you know, and, you know, if you're interested in subscribing, pick a podcast that that you like and you want to listen to on a regular basis. Maybe something like, I don't know. This Week
in... The IoT Podcast?
Oh, there you go.
I am teasing you.
There you go. No, because I already subscribed to This Week in Google. Chatting with Chuck? No. No.
Oh, you have to say the Internet of Things.
I found it.
Oh, there I am.
I found it.
It's the same. I searched for Twig. Didn't find it.
Yeah, search for Twit, and all of ours will be there.
Oh, is that it? Okay,
yeah, search for Twit. You'll find everything. Then you press the subscribe button. But here's the feature I really like. Under the three dots, add to home screen. And now you can have album art of your favorite podcasts right there on the home screen. So if you want to listen to your show, there's actually an icon for it, and you can listen to it. Some of the controls are, you know, primitive compared to what's out there. You can't, you know... But Google says they're going to improve this over time. And I think anything that makes it easier to listen to podcasts is great in my book. And it's free. If you're on Android, Google Podcasts now out. And that is a nice feature, the ability to put the album art right on an Android home screen so that you just tap it, boom, and it comes up.
Place.
Yeah.
And it syncs to the Google Home. We actually talked about this on our show. So
thank you for reminding me. So if I get halfway through Stacey on IoT and then I get home, I can just tell the Google Home, play the rest of it, and it'll start where I left off.
But it's only a one-way sync from the phone to the home.
Oh, it doesn't remember what you listen to on the home?
It doesn't go. It's only one way. That's a downside so far.
That's dopey.
Yes.
Oh, that's dopey. Ooh.
It can go from phone to home, but it can't.
The other thing I wish it had.
Yes.
Was a tech category on the
front. Isn't that weird? I went through all of them. It's got everything but not tech. We don't show up in any other categories. We'd probably show up in tech, but we don't.
Who the heck do you think invented friggin' podcasts?
I know.
Geeks.
It used to be the only podcasts were about tech, and now...
Like the only blogs back in the day.
Now it's everything else. But that's all right.
How's that first mover advantage feel, fella?
Yeah. No, nothing. Zippity-doo-dah. It's been a fun ride.
You've been replaced by Skolm.
Skolm. Yeah, no, I don't think I'll ever do anything like that. I'm just going to ride this off into the sunset. You know, that's okay. That's good. That's what happens.
Let me tell you, kids. That's what happens.
I'm going to be replaced by kids. That's good.
Well, yeah, it beats being replaced by puppies or something.
Or being replaced weasels. By the Leonard Tau Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. That's him right there, Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com, at Jeff Jarvis. He's also director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
You don't need to do this.
I got it all. I got prompter. I got it on prompter.
You did well. You did it, yeah.
Thank you, Jeff, for being here. Always
lower
a pleasure.
Third is going to go up to here.
Oh, my God. We'll figure out a way to get a scrolling lower third in one day. Just like we're going to figure out how to give Stacey Higginbotham a giant boxing glove she can pop at me whenever she's mad. She didn't get mad at me today. I must have been okay.
No. Although I did notice everything we tweet, all of our, so I'm doing this in all of them.
In every one
it's
of
like,
them.
The show promo videos.
I'm going to tell the marketing guy. I'm going to tell the marketing guy. No more Stacey head in her hands. She's
Stacey's
happy.
Stacey's clearly frustrated with this. But a lot of times I am cheery.
Almost all the time. Except when Leo says something stupid. Which happens
almost all the time. I forgot. Speaking of Twitter. So I went on Twitter and I happened to see a tweet the other day that just said, "Oh, Leo Porter, I'm so fed up. You just keep on using your shows to promote Brianna Wu's campaign." So I said back, "Thank you. I'll remember to mention her campaign on the show." So I just did.
I just gave her some money because the primaries are coming up in Massachusetts. Brianna's running for Congress in the Massachusetts 8th against an incumbent who ran unopposed last time and won with, what did she say, like 20,000 votes out of the 150,000 voters in the district? It's crazy. BriannaWu2018.com. No, in fact, I don't mind. It's not just Brianna. I mean, if anybody who is tech savvy who is running for Congress, you got my vote, particularly if you're a woman. Because we need more women in Congress.
Bloomberg is pledging $80 million to support Democrats.
I saw that.
Isn't that amazing?
When's he running? He's a Republican. That's the funny
ancient.
Thing. Yeah, he is. He's too old. He'd be 70. He'd be 76, I think, when he if on inauguration.
Sorry. But he's really old.
But it's funny that he's supporting Democrats, isn't it? Not.
No, he was. He's a New York Republican.
Right.
I mean.
Yeah,
he's Donald Trump. Thank you, Stacey. Stacey on IoT.com is the website at Giga Stacey. And thank you all for being here. We do this show. This is my last show of the week. I know it's Wednesday. I have an easy life. We do this show.
What are you having for dinner?
I told you. Chicken tikka masala.
Oh, that's nice.
With homemade naan bread. You fry it up.
You were saying
skillet.
We do this show. When do we do this show, Leo?
Dinner time.
We do this show.
Dinner time, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. If you want to stop by and watch live, twit.tv/live. You can get it on demand, too, of course. Audio and video available wherever podcasts are stored, including, well, the Google one's only audio, but you can get video in many podcast applications or on our website, twit.tv/twig. Hey, thanks so much for watching. I appreciate it. And we'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.